And good morning. Coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 101.3 is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. 3.5 hours of dialogue, interviews from the streets, possible phone-ins, and a little bit of music and some newspaper examination by yours truly. I'm Robert Norris. This is a twice-weekly show, in case you haven't heard it before. And it's one that I encourage people to call into. The call-in numbers here are 831-427-3772, 427-3772, and 469-3119, 469-3119. I'll be giving more numbers later for those who want to catch me off air if they've got some other subjects they think should be covered or something that they don't want to talk about on the air necessarily, but want to talk to me anyway. Actually, the number is pretty easy, 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, 423-4833, and that's the number to call if you want to get a hold of me. It's also the number for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which, as regular listeners know, is sort of the focus of this show, the specific concerns of the criminalization of poor people in Santa Cruz, abuses by people in power politically, the chances for a new resistance and real community response to that. And I also tend to cover protest movements that are happening around a variety of issues, ranging from fluoride to smart meters to, Safeway out in Aptos. Try to cover what the community is trying to say and the larger institutions and authorities are trying to repress. And that, I guess that suits my underdog sympathies. So, do join the show. And again, the call-in number for those who want to call is 427-3772. Let's begin with some audio from about a month ago, a little bit less. The mime troupe, the San Francisco mime troupe, was visiting San Lorenzo Park. And there were also some other activists setting up to support the Santa Cruz 11. Seven of them are now still charged with felonies and misdemeanors, essentially for an active reporting and support for an occupation that happened about a year ago at a vacant bank building owned by Wells Fargo. It's still vacant, now surrounded by barbed wire. And there was a variety of activity happening around the San Francisco Mime Troupe. Some of it was the weekly Santa Cruz kind of charity activity by religious groups, and one of them is a pastor who I interviewed, and the first half of the interview was kind of garbled and lost, so we're going to kind of jump into the middle of the interview, and he'll be introducing himself. His first name is Steve, and he's the pastor, I believe, of the Arrett Circle Church. I don't know, that's not quite the name of it, but it's out there at the Arrett Circle on the west side, and for years, the Arrett Circle Church has been on and off, willing to have one or two homeless people who live in their vehicles park there at night and sleep there, which, as of the mid-90s, became an exception to the sleeping ban. The law in Santa Cruz criminalizes falling asleep on any public property, and much private property, inside the city limits, even if you're parked in your own vehicle and legally parked, and even if you're parked on your own property. That's criminal behavior in Santa Cruz, and there was an exception passed to that in 1995, which said that three vehicles could park in a church parking lot with the permission of the owner if they were legally licensed and so forth. And in 1999, that was extended to business parking lots for two vehicles, which I think rarely happens, although I've heard, it occasionally happens, or maybe it happens more than I know, and I don't get reports about it. In any case, as regular listeners to this show know, and also people who are concerned about the community in this regard know, there's been a lot of crackdown on homeless people's welfare, health, campgrounds, property, in a sort of a political move to appease sort of a hysteria on the right that has grown up, but it's always been there, this sort of xenophobia of the homeless person, this desire to gentrify and upgrade the university by gating and excluding people, this fanciful preoccupation with safety, where safety to people means not seeing poor people and not seeing grubby people and not seeing people doing recycling activities or sitting down on the sidewalk or spare changing. That's safety for a certain class of people. And indeed, you know, it's sort of a middle-class sense. If you go to a shopping mall, everything is smooth and sleek, and you just spend your money and you leave, and there's no problems, except, of course, most people don't have enough money to deal with the situation, so they have to work a little harder and all that sort of thing. So, here's this first series of interviews, again, with Pastor Steve, and there's going to be some subsequent interviews. Again, if you have any thoughts, you want to call in, 427-3772 is the number, please do. You can also try to email me, and the email address is rnorse, that's me, Robert Norse, R-N-O-R-S-E, 3, the number 3, at hotmail.com. rnorse3@hotmail.com. I'll try to keep an eye on that, too, and we'll take it from there.
Decade, almost 2 decades now, has had folks pretty continuously in vehicles who are sleeping in the parking lot, sometimes up to 3.
You can't have more than 3, so we've had as many as 3 vehicles in the parking lot at a time. I don't know that we've been doing it for 10 or 20 years, but at least for 6.
Mm-hmm. I know the amendment happened in 95, and you were doing it at least occasionally. The church was doing it back then. I don't know who was the pastor at that time. There was a very famous case of a guy called Brian Andrus, who was... He was suffocated after an arrest up there, not at the church, but near the church. Because folks would often park around the church, thinking they'd get some kind of protection from the vigilantes and the police. There has been a crackdown downtown, as you know about, but you say that summer has been fairly quiet up there. There's been, or rather, you've been keeping more of a, I don't know, a tight ship? Or...
Well, I don't know that we've been trying to keep a tighter ship. It's just that it's happened that it's summertime and people have other places to be and other places to sleep. So even though we continue to feed 60, 80 people on a Tuesday and probably almost that many on a Sunday and give away a lot of food baskets, have some showers and all, but the traffic has been slower and quieter and more mellow. It's just kind of a lazy summer vibe right now on the west side as far as I can see.
It is the beginning of the month, of course.
It is the beginning of the month, yes. And, you know, of course, we fed probably closer to 100 people on the last Tuesday of the month last month. That got real busy because it was a fifth Tuesday in the month, and so people were really stretched to find food at the end of the month.
Now, should we mention where people can go for food on those days? Would you want that known?
Sure. We have a meal on Tuesday nights at 5:30, and also after church on Sunday, we for a long time just all ate together, enjoyed a meal together, and we're just one community. Anybody can come.
Are you required to attend services for the Sunday meal?
No. Not at all.
And you provide, you know, what, venison, roast beef, pheasant under glass?
It's home-cooked food. Whatever the team that's up for that Sunday or that Tuesday is known to cook, but it's really good home-cooked food. And I would have to say that we have one chef that's almost always in charge on Tuesdays, and it's delicious food. He's a miracle worker with what he can put together on sometimes a tight budget.
And again, the times for these meals are?
Tuesday at 5:30. And Sunday about 11:30, depending on how long-winded I am as a preacher.
And where can the church be found?
111 Errett Circle. We're the circle church right in the middle of the circles on the lower west side.
Or perhaps, more appropriately, the church can be found among the people.
The church really is wherever people are. And we just happen to have a building that we're in some of the time. Like right now, we're out here at San Lorenzo Park giving away sandwiches.
And apparently someone's playing chess as well. I guess that's Renee's Curry's chess set.
That's Renee Curry's chess board. She's here with us. We sometimes partner with Renee, as many other churches do as well. And I've got some young adults from all over the state who are out here learning a little bit about what it is like to be in relationships with folks that live on the street.
Now, I see that we have a collection of homeless folks, homeless-looking folks over to the side. A lot of bicycles, umbrellas, folks kind of trying to take in the advantage of the shade, maybe even sleep, since it's legal to sleep during the day, but strangely enough, not at night in Santa Cruz. What do you make of that one, Stephen?
Well, you know, I have often gone on Pacific Avenue with my wife when she's gone shopping, and she usually goes in a clothing store, and when that happens, I find a park bench to sit on while she spends endless hours, it seems like, buying clothes, and I almost inevitably fall asleep. I have trouble believing that's a criminal act.
Well, during the day, there is no law against sleeping, although there is a law of spending more than an hour on a park bench.
Oh, now, when I sleep, I can, when she shops and I sleep, it can be more than an hour.
I may have to follow you around and document your criminal behavior. But after 11 o'clock at night, it is illegal to sleep, as you know, because that's one of the reasons that only three vehicles are allowed in your parking lot. Otherwise, you could be able to put as many people as you want in your parking lot.
Yeah, the city's allows an exemption for churches, as you know, that I think Scott Kennedy put into the city codes that allows us to provide hospitality. I call it sanctuary, which is an ancient tradition. Churches have always been sanctuaries for people that
extremely
had nowhere to go.
Extremely limited sanctuary.
But it's extremely limited. Three vehicles that we can have, as long as they're registered and licensed and all that, we can allow to be in our parking lot for, overnight. And so we've, from time to time, when it seemed like the right thing to do and it was a safe and an appropriate situation, often had folks in the parking lot. We have a couple of folks right now that are very, very positive influences on our property.
Do you have police roaming the area, kind of combing for the illegal fourth vehicle, or possibly people might be sleeping in their vehicles at night? I've heard former Lieutenant Joe Habey is the terror of the parked vehicles from one of my homeless associates. Crow advises me that he runs around posting 72-hour notices wherever he can, and he's, even though he's a retired SCPD guy, he still seems to be very vigilant. Is he vigilant in your neighborhood?
You'd have to ask some of the folks that live in their vehicles, not on my parking lot, and as far as I know, not on the street directly adjacent to the church. There's not been a lot. If someone's been there for a few days, it will get tagged. I don't know if Officer Habey is doing it or someone else. But I have to say, the police have not been too hard on us. Some of the neighbors wish they were harder on us. They enforce the law, as far as we're concerned, but they've done a pretty balanced job, I think, on our property as to being available to us to keep things safe, but at the same time, they haven't harassed me personally or the church. The police haven't, not on our property. And I would say other things about when folks are down by Antonelli's Pond or at Safeway or other places, folks sometimes have a harder time.
Now, have the police been called in your area in the last 6 months? How many times would you say that's happened?
I was so fed up.
This is the kind of question that Lynn Robinson's going to ask you, council member.
I haven't checked lately on the crime map, but not an awful lot within Arid Circle or the two or three circles outside of that this immediate neighborhood of the church. There aren't very few calls. We just had a situation. I just called the police because someone found some property that had been abandoned by the road, and they brought it to me because, being that they live on the street, they didn't want to be involved with the police. So they brought it to me and asked me to see if I could get it in the right person's hands. I called the police, and we have a claim number, and it's in their property department, and hopefully the person that lost this fairly valuable property will show up and pick it up.
You could always pass it on to me, and I could finance my next European tour.
Well, you'd have to talk to the police department. It's in their property department right now, but I have a claim number, and if it's not claimed, I'm actually get it back. But the biggest thing is it's probably stolen, and it needs to be returned to the person that lost it. And, but it was a homeless person who turned it in to me so they could get to the person that actually it belongs to.
And an honest homeless person. Now, according to Deputy Chief Clark, that's a contradiction in terms. Haven't you read his most recent story in the Santa Cruz Weekly, or this is the Good Times, in which he points out that homeless people camping in camps are essentially havens for drug use, crime, and laziness?
Well, like all human societies, there's some of that. And there's some of the most marvelous people that I've ever met happen to live outside. Some of my dearest friends and most loyal church members live outside.
Well, as a Christian, you would say that, wouldn't you?
Well, yeah, but it happens to be true. Come on Sunday, you'll see a number of folks, and some of the folks you might not realize, they actually live outside. And they're devout, ethical Christian believers.
How long have you been doing this, Steve?
Well, I've been a minister since 1998, so I guess that's 14 years, and I've been at the Circle Church 9 years. We've been doing what we're doing in terms of ministry to the homeless for about 6 years in a very active way at the Circle Church.
And before that, what was your life like?
Well, I pastored a church for 5 years in Indianapolis, Indiana, or near there. Before that, I was an alcoholism and drug abuse counselor for 15 years.
A drinker?
No, I was never a drinker. My father was. A lot of my family members were drinkers, but I wasn't.
Anything you want to, if people want to know more about the church you preach at, the kind of stuff you talk about, the services that are available, is there a website they can go to?
There's a website, thecirclechurch.org. Mm-hmm. Our worship services are Sunday mornings at 10 o'clock. Or if you really want to understand what we're about, you know, perhaps even clearer understanding of what our values are than coming to church on Sunday morning at 10 o'clock is come for lunch or come on Tuesday evening for lunch and you'll see what we're really about.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, Robert.
All right.
And apparently, that's in about 15 minutes for those of you who are on the west side and want to check out the Arrett Circle Church. It's, I guess, a 10 o'clock preaching and an 11:30 a.m. munching. If you want to skip the preaching, go to the meal. It's 11:30. If you want to check out Steve and what he's got to say, Christianity-wise, check them out at 10 o'clock in about 15 minutes. There's also another meal, I believe, out at the Homeless Lack of Services Center, also run by a religious group that I think we've heard some concerns about, at least from Andrea Morgan, who talked about being excluded and forcefully excluded from that meal. We have a caller, though. Perhaps we can get some insight here. Hey there, caller. You're on Free Radio. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Robert. I think it's wonderful that they're letting three people into the parking lot and whatnot, but and the gentleman seemed very cool, and I'm not feeling like he's an enemy or anything, but what you were hearing described as the destruction of a theology rather than the active living out of a theology. Like, all you have to do is, like, read The Last Temptation of Christ and see that the God that they're trying to worship is a civil, disobedient God that wasn't interested at all, or man, that wasn't interested at all in going by the rules of the society that he was living in. They're entirely missing the point. They're getting the ministering to the poor part, but the foundation that whole claim and reason of doing that is based on is a fundamental questioning of the society that you're living in, which the at least mythological or historical view of Jesus that comes down to us, that's what he was deeply questioning, and that's what the church has de-evolved to not be doing.
You know, I don't know. I'm not much of a historian, though. I've done a little bit of reading about civil disobedience and early Christianity and how it was really primarily concerned with things like thou shalt not kill and thou shalt not follow the orders of the Roman Empire to go out and slay people and things of that sort. But I know that I wonder how easy or difficult comparatively it was, let's say, in the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd centuries A.D. to be able to actually have an independent organization like that compared with now. I mean, it looks like most of the churches, you know, throughout the world are collaborators with authority, or at least they have to sort of, you know, they are not actively preaching against authority, most of them. And maybe that was the case with the mainline churches, whether they were the Roman churches or the Zoroastrian churches, whatever they were, back around the time of you know, early Christianity. I'm always interested in the historical reality rather than the mythologies that we sort of lay on. And I don't know.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. No. Me too. Me too. I mean, they can both be interesting. Just wanted to make that comment. I don't mean to. I mean, I'm glad that they're doing what they're doing, but they should just let everybody in there. They should let as many numbers as they want to, and then let the government come to them to fuck with them. That is totally. Come on. You know what I mean? It's just you don't have to be some kind of theologian and study it that intricately. That's just basically what Jesus was about, whether mythological view, historical, whatever you want to think about. It's a meme more than anything else. Why? None of us are ever going to meet Jesus unless it's sometime after death or whatever. In this current reality, he's a man who lived a long time ago. The ideas about what he was about are way more important. And I would. I mean, there's probably many books about it. Just read The Last Temptation of Christ, and you'll see the you know intense radicalism of this idea of Jesus, which just wasn't coming through right there, man. It's just, it ain't happening. It's not there.
You know,
and I think we need to put that out there very directly.
That is a desecration of a tradition. I hear you there.
A desecration.
I hear you there, Matthew. I think, you know, I don't know what the, it's really, you know, when we talk about what the ideas of some shrouded historical figure was and who gives a shit what his or her ideas were. The reality,
except, except that the part of it is it has to do with you because you're living some of that stuff out. You're right. It has to do with now and what we're doing, it's only influenced by that stuff. Be kind, everybody, and don't ask anybody permission to be kind to somebody.
I hear you there.
In the parking lot, you have to ask permission. And this is another thing that you sent out an email that maybe we can talk about later and I can call back, but there's totally stuff happening here, just like in Berkeley, where I think it's more legalized here for them to stop you from putting up flyers. It seemed like in that Berkeley article that you sent around, you know, that was actually a contradiction to their law. Here, I think there's a statute that you cannot post things and that just,
you mean Fresno, right?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Yes, I'm in Fresno.
Let me interrupt you for a moment because I wanted to sort of conclude this thought, which is that, the criticism that churches have a responsibility, or not so much churches, those who want to follow an ideal, wherever it came from, whether it's, you know, Jesus or, you know, anybody else, I think a lot of us believe it's a good ideal. That there are things more important than authorities laying down rules. That is to say, truly helping each other, if that's what our ideal is, or maintaining our own liberty and freedom of action, if that's what our ideal is, or different kinds of ways of looking at it, or deciding in the moment what is to be done, not going by pre-constructed rules laid down by elites and authorities who seem to be acting on behalf of a small group. Let's look. If you look at the real situation, even such places as the Sub Rosa Cafe, for example, in Santa Cruz, an anarchist cafe. I don't know if you've been there. That was probably after you left town. They set up shop.
I have been there, though.
They don't let people sleep there at night, and they have a somewhat centralized structure of rules dealt with by an elite, and they don't actually do things in the moment based on what is the most sensible situation and talk it out at the time. And they accommodate because they want a license. They want to keep their place open. And I've said to them, they're not, in the most active sense. If you want to be a true believer in these principles, whether you want to call them anarchism or, Christian, fundamental spiritual Christianity of a sort of a radical sort, you have to be prepared, to abandon property, to abandon rights that, or privileges, you might say, authorized privileges by authorities. And that's not something that established even so-called anarchist groups that are that do provide a real service. I love the library at the Sub Rosa. I meet there every week. I respect a lot of the ideas they promulgate. I put my flyers up there. But if you want to really get radical, you have to essentially be prepared to move in a week. To move on or to stand up and to go to jail and to do it in jail. I mean that and some people do that. There are people who do that. They're almost mythological. They're heroes in a certain sense. But I guess, and I have to say, we may all have roles to play here. Some of them aren't so radical. I have to, I want to acknowledge those people too.
No, that's valid. That's a very good point. And some about the Sub Rosa thing. Not being there, it seems like that's the beginning of a whole conversation where you could have people calling in who live there and who have been around for what has happened or the ongoing thing. I mean, my perception is that it's not run by an elite, just by a collective of the people that put together the space. But again, I don't want to get into the mode of necessarily contradicting what you're saying. I think it's maybe more appropriate for people who have been around there and really know what has been happening. Maybe the elite part was the only part that seemed a little extreme. But again, I haven't been there to have your experiences with what goes on. I do know a few of the people who work in it, but that doesn't mean that I have all the information about what has been happening. So
And it's just not an attempt to criticize the Sub Rosa, in any sort of fundamental way, although I do. I mean, I do make these criticisms at different times. I've had my run-ins with the authorities because they are authorities. They act as authorities in the Sub Rosa. And, but nonetheless, it's a form of accommodation, working things out, just like they work out their accommodations with the planning department or the police or whatever the hell they're working out. Because they don't have the money for a bunch of lawyers. And they don't have, think they have the determination to move to a vacant field if their permits are turned down or, if their people are arrested. They're not prepared to set up in jail. I don't think that they are prepared to do that. And so they have to make certain accommodations. I think that's my sense of it. Although maybe they don't. Maybe the determination of people not to make accommodations would spread like, just like, you know, a fear is contagious. Courage may also be contagious.
Well, my perception of it is more, and again, you know, the disclaimer that I'm here in Fresno, I haven't seen all of it, but it's a perception more that I saw it as less of a combination with the power as them not wanting to make it like the drop-in center that doesn't exist anymore. It's not a homeless services center. It just isn't.
No, but if you're going to hold up the principle that people have the right to sleep at night, and then you deny them if somebody falls asleep and you kick them out for sleeping there. Similarly with Free Radio Santa Cruz, you're not allowed to sleep in the studio here, you know, because there's an agreement with the collective where we are working. And so there are all these accommodations that people make in which they essentially become little authorities and little police officers. And it's kind of sad in a way. It certainly gets, everything gets modeled in a smaller way, you know, down to the, you know, the kid kicking the dog after he gets kicked by the mom or gets kicked by the dad or gets kicked by the
boss. Wow, I mean, man, I don't know if I could make those connections, but I'm not saying those connections are wrong. I just think that having any kind of structure or, I mean, these are really, actually, these are points that I don't have any one set viewpoint on, and maybe that doesn't take the conversation that profitably further, but it's just true, because I don't know if, I'm not sure to what extent we should have rules and models that are already set up and sort of rigid. I don't believe that anyone having that by definition is some kind of small policeman or some accommodation to power. I think that egalitarian / anarchist / socialist sort of societies can have rules. I think maybe it's a matter of degree and or who's making the rules and how available the decision-making process is, which brings me back to a little bit of the part that I find bizarre about the stance of churches. Their God was killed by an autocratic regime. So you think that they would, out of anyone, any religious tradition or even any group in general, be very, I mean, hostile, not violent, but very, let's say, resistant, absolutely impregnably resistant to any type of truck with an autocratic decision-making process? You'd think that would be almost the most important, along with nonviolence, maybe a few other short list of precepts. And my question is, huh? What the fucking fuck, man? That is just bizarre, and that needed to be explained like a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And that very much affects the person you were talking to. If he's a true Christian, I would assume that, wow, this autocratic decision-making process of the Santa Cruz government, I figured they would be completely against, and just on a Christian level, and going back to their God who was crucified for, being himself.
There are long disputes about give unto Caesar what is Caesar's and all this shit. You get some sects of Christianity are very, whole Christianity structure is very authoritarian usually, with some exceptions. Anyway, that's not really my main focus this morning, and I want to move on. So,
please do, man. Thanks for taking the time, and I'll keep listening, bro.
Sure. Thank you, man.
Bye-bye. Don't stop rocking.
All right. That's our Fresno man who's a regular listener and a regular contributor. Thank you, Matthew. And a former broadcaster here at Free Radio as well. I think he's working with Food Not Bombs in Fresno and other groups to try to reclaim rights for poor people and the community generally, the commons generally, that have been sort of taken by the large interests and bureaucratic institutions that claim to represent the people but actually don't and have no real accountability to the community either, which is the case here in Santa Cruz. So the people that make the rules that suddenly set up curfews at night that ban people from being in places without any justification, without any public input, without any discussion or acknowledgement of the needs or even the rights of people, or the Constitution itself, which is, I see far too much respect for old, dusty documents. But a lot of the principles of the Constitution are good ones, although not broadly enough applied, not deeply enough applied. But nonetheless, when you see those very sort of time-honored principles being discarded or warped or reinterpreted, it's could be a warning bell for all of us. Let's hear some more from the these are a bunch of interviews from the beginning of this month. I should say last month, August. And let's see what we got.
And the rest of this tape is personal.
So we better wait on that. I sometimes mix the personal and the political in my tapes. Not terribly interesting to hear me ruminating on this and that, which is fascinating to me, but not necessarily fascinating to listeners. So let me remind you, listeners who've just tuned in, it's 101.3 FM you're listening to. If you want to catch us on the stream, go to your browser and write the words tune in as one word, tune in, and then write FRSC when you hit the tune in website, and you will find the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz, FRSC at tune in on the browser, or just go to 101.3 and you'll catch us. If you want to catch archives of this show, and there are probably several hundred now, you can go to the HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom website, which is being updated. I'm impressed. New articles are being posted from the last year. We're trying to archive a lot of stuff. I have an obsession for that sort of thing, and I think it can be helpful to people looking to cover certain subjects and see certain perspectives, even documenting the, should we say, warped perspectives of the Sentinel and the local media, and having some place to refer to. The archives on the Sentinel often disappear, and so I'm trying to keep homeless archives on the HUF website there for a longer period of time. There's a whole series of interesting historical articles on homelessness and activism to fight the criminalization of poor people from the newspaper Street Spirit, which last month came out with two long articles on the Santa Cruz 11. One of them I wrote, one of them John Malkin wrote earlier for Good Times and was reprinted there. But there's a whole series of very Santa Cruz-specific articles, and articles by Santa Cruz authors Linda LeMaster, Becky Johnson, Sherry Connable, myself, Mama Joy, a poet, Coral Brun, all kinds of people who, some of whom are regular either talkers or broadcasters on free radio. And a lot of these articles are from a decade or two ago, but they do kind of chronicle the history of homeless struggles in Santa Cruz, and I think are really, I'm fascinated with them, but then again, I was involved in all that, so I have a sort of a personal sort of perspective. But I think it's useful to have that kind of history, and it's available on the HUF website. HUFSantaCruz.org is the address to go to. HUFF Santa Cruz, all one word, all small letters, HUFSantaCruz.org, and you'll find the HUF website, and you can play around with that. It's still in process and in progress. I think it's going to get better, though. I want to thank Valerie and Swami, who are really working hard on that website. Thanks a lot for what you're doing. I think it's a community service. So it's time for more street interviews, methinks. So let's see if we can do that. Here's some stuff likewise from early August. I didn't really get through this backlog, even though I have two shows a week, probably more shows than almost anybody on free radio, or more airtime, you might say. But I just never seem to be able to play everything I've done. Not that necessarily everything I've done is airworthy. I get a lot of criticism for lack of editing on this stuff. But there's an editor who wants to come forward and help out. Hey, I am all for some volunteers stepping up to the plate. And indeed, if you want to help with a variety of projects that HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, has on its huge back burner, please step up or come on to the meeting, sit down. It's Wednesday at 10 o'clock, the Sub Rosa Cafe, 703 Pacific, and do that. Or just call in, say, I can't come to meetings, I hate meetings, but if I can do something to help, write a letter, give you some advice on a computer, do some graphics, I don't know, show up at a protest, I'd be happy to do it. And that's also really helpful. The number to call for that is 423-HUF, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and that, you know, I'll call you back, I'll answer the phone, assuming my phone is working. I was out of order for a little while there, and then it got back in service again last week, and I'll get back to you, and we'll use whatever you are willing to offer. So, let's hear some more interviews from the street, maybe from you as well. 427-3772. Interested in what's going on out there in the streets? There's a big crackdown on campgrounds, or has been for the last 6 weeks. I guess the police promised a 6-week crackdown. Maybe they're stopping now. Wouldn't that be nice? I I don't know that that's necessarily true. I don't think it is from the reports I've been getting, but I can't really, haven't been able to judge whether there's been a slowdown in the last week or not. Maybe you listeners out there can tell me if you've got some more information about that. 427-3772 is the call-in number, 427-3772. Give me a call.
So, it's about 9:20. I'm here on Pacific Avenue on Thursday evening, August 2nd. We have a smoker here smoking illegally on Pacific Avenue. Shocking. We're talking with a man who wants to give his name or not.
I'll stay anonymous.
And you say you're... Well, you tell me what you were telling me a moment ago.
Well, I just noticed there's a lot of street homeless people out here, and they're fed a bowl of soup at St. Vincent de Paul that's usually watered down in vegetables, and then they get a crappy tray at 4 o'clock at the shelter, and nobody will help them out and give them money. A lot of these people have their wallets stolen. They have medical problems, and the other day I saw a poor old lady, they took her wheelchair away, you know. And
who took her wheelchair?
Hospital took her wheelchair away, and she was.
Where did you see this?
She had a fistula. Do you know what that is?
I think so. It's like a boil.
It's a tear in the vaginal, and it makes them constantly urinate.
Oh wow!
And it was sad because she was in pain, real hardcore pain, and she's an old, real old lady, and I had some mushrooms and gave her some mushrooms, and I felt better about doing that, you know.
Magic mushrooms.
Yes. Yep.
Yep. What was her response? Did she?
I don't know. I took off into the woods myself, but I hope I made her day. You know, it's just sad to see how some people are so wealthy and they'll just step on other people. You know.
How long have you been in town?
I've been back about a week at least. You know, I live pretty good out in the woods, and I have a good time. You know, but I just think it's sad. You know, I got a computer and stuff, and some. You know, I think there's millionaires out there that, you know, could really buy some homeless people a laptop. You know, if they feel they're not a junkie or going to sell it for drugs, they. You know, I know one guy out here, he's pushing his cart, and he always had a computer, and he said people keep stealing from him, you know. They keep ripping him off. So I don't know. I just, you know.
How long have you been in the Santa Cruz area?
I've been coming and going about 20 years.
What, do you see much different, much change in the last 20 years?
The expansion of the schools always rips my head off. I don't know. I always figured this was more of an adult town, but I'm constantly coming and going. I can't get used to modernization as I get older, you know. I'm almost 40, and I've, you know, seen cell phones come out and how people use that, and I don't know. I'm looking for that all-time, you know, high, you know, having a good time, you know. As I get older, I wish I were 20 again. When I was 20, I sure helped out homeless people. I gave them money, you know.
You were living here when you were 20?
No, I lived in Prescott, Arizona.
And when did you come here?
Oh, God, I've been coming and going through here for 20 years.
But you this hasn't been your stopping place, your roosting place?
Every now and then, you know, I'll come here and stay for a year or so, you know. It's a good old town. It's still fun. You know, I just don't like it during the day. You know, I think I see a lot of people stepping on. It's sad, you know.
More so than a few years ago?
Yeah, definitely. From when I lived here in 99, and I'd go out and I'd clean and I'd make good money every day, you know. And now I try and I do my talent for money, and I.
What do you do?
I'd rather not say it, but I just, you know, I had a good education. I studied medicine here, and I just see a lot of people stepping on, you know.
Well, on the upside, people can walk their fancy dogs on the avenue.
Well, at least they can walk their dogs, you know. They didn't used to, you know.
Right. Not, unless you're homeless and panhandling, then it's illegal.
I stay off the block, you know. I see I don't like those, I avoid those hospitality people, you know. I don't like them walking up to me. They're kind of wig you out, you know.
And why don't you like our hosts?
A couple of them seem okay. I remember there's one lady who's been here like 20 years, like 10 years, and I avoid her like the plague, you know.
But she wants to help you.
She's not helping me, you know. But I don't know. I don't like that whole Bay Area thing where you try and ask somebody for directions and they just ignore you. You know, I'm not that kind of person. I guess I'm more of a hometown boy.
Well, thank you. And any final words before we leave?
I don't know. And I try to Twitter like Stephen Colbert and stuff like that, and some real eccentric billionaires like Richard Branson to buy some homeless people a laptop. Give them TV at least, you know. Give them some.
Keep us posted if you actually get some results.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Thank you. So we're talking with a
local pirate radio.
A man in front of two closed stores, the pharmacy and the Santa Cruz Plumbing, previously Hardy. I'm not sure what this store is. It's 1101B Pacific. We're talking with
David.
And David, you're looking forward to a good weekend here in Santa Cruz.
I believe that there will be a lot of people around, and I believe the weather should stay well. And we went through some. We're going to have some good surf coming this way. Surfers are going to be out there. The chicks are all dressed to kill and hunt and kill. And the dudes are like buff and ready to take on the mission, man. It's going to be a hell of a time.
Yeah, I think it'll be a good weekend.
Yeah.
What about you, sir? You're a long-time Santa Cruz resident, computer nerd, some would say, aficionado, others would say. What? You don't look homeless. Are you just trying to disguise yourself as a house person?
I would rather consider myself to be a blogger. I'm not actually of the hyper intelligence technophilia crew of Santa Cruz that really seem to have this place completely under wraps. It's a brilliant city, but lately I find that the magic people that are being recruited left and right over the decades in Santa Cruz have been stifled by the blue meanies who will not let them camp and find their places to continue the growth of this glorious magical city. Because without those magical hippies coming to Santa Cruz to eventually become part of Santa Cruz will die and wither. We need more hippies. Send more hippies.
More hippies like you, sir?
No, I'm not a hippie.
You're not a hippie.
I think the guy next to me has a point. I think that unfortunately, counterculture is an expensive thing to contain and in an organized society, I guess it's something that has to be done. It's like kind of like the lesser of two evils is to contain it. I believe that if you try and inhibit or prohibit the counterculture, I think that what you do is you just get the worst variation of it. You know, you get people that are just trying to exploit it because they're trying to get what they can before they have to run for cover. I think that if you allow it to exist and you let it flourish, it could brighten your economy. Lord knows that the storefronts here that are open owe quite a bit to all the street performers who lighten the mood and put everybody in a lighter step and reach into their pockets before they even get in the door. And those people cannot exist without a respectful, compassionate day-to-day existence.
What do you say?
I second that. Indeed.
We've been talking
with Mark
and
David.
Thank you both. So I'm out here with the Santa Cruz 11. It's August 3rd. We have a couple of passers-by who are giving us the high five.
Of course.
And a man taking a picture of the folks lined up. We have the women in black, Stand for Peace, who are doing their traditional Friday afternoon demonstration on the corner here at Cooper and Pacific. We have Santa Cruz Indie Media, represented by Bradley Stewart, or Bradley Allen, who is taking photos. And we have some passers-by. And we have the usual self-promoting Steve Plaich, who is holding up part of a Support the Santa Cruz 11 banner. We set Becky Johnson, one of the Santa Cruz 11.
Free Becky Johnson.
Mel Nunez is one of the characters who hangs around the Red Church, despite Cynthia Matthews' earnest protestations. Cynthia's running for city council. Steve, you're running for city council as well. What do you think of former council member and prospective future council member Cynthia Matthews?
Well, Cynthia and I really have not seen eye to eye on much of anything in recent times, but it'll be an interesting campaign. We'll see what happens.
Is it true that you and Cynthia are secretly meeting? And
no comment on that.
Very well. Indeed. So we're here with with Mel Nunez, who's holding part of the Support the Santa Cruz 11 sign and holding a multicolored peace flag. Mel, do you ever get tired? I see you giving out bagels on Monday at the Calvary Episcopal. It's Friday. Don't you ever realize these meaningless peace protests only lead to greater wars? Why don't you support your leaders in this matter? Or let things work through the political system. Obama is running for president.
President of what?
The United States. These United States.
Yeah,
say, can you see? Go ahead.
I don't believe in it anymore. I'm sorry. But, I just try to... I'm a groupie. I need to hang out with people that have some hope and some soul and some clear thinking. And that's where I am today. And that's the end of my story.
Thank you. We've been talking with...
Mel.
Thank you, Mel. So we have a man who is not being harassed, but who was warrant checked. How did that go down?
Well, they discovered that I did have a warrant in San Luis Obispo, but they decided that they didn't want to export me all the way down.
Just
to
murder, rape?
No, it's for camping.
Camping?
Yeah.
That's worse. You're ruining the businesses of poor San Luis Obispo and how you come to destroy the businesses of Santa Cruz.
Well, I try and keep it hidden. That's what they've advised me to do. They say, as long as you're hidden, out of sight, out of mind. I try to be peaceful about it.
And have you been successful? Because there have been a lot of police, should we say, beating the bushes, I've noticed. I've heard.
Some of them do beat the bushes, but I have been successful thus far. I have been able to find a... A corner bush.
So you've gotten no citations yourself?
No, not locally.
How long have you been here?
I've been here about a week.
And this is your first time through the Holy Cross, so to speak?
No, I've been here before. I've been coming here since I was a teenager.
And have you, I always ask this question, do you notice any differences between your early days and now?
Basically, I think the atmosphere and the climate is the same as it was in the 60s. You know, it's similar, but people are more aware of it. A lot of it's come to the surface, because back then it was kind of a movement, but now it's kind of a process of individuation. Individuation, but it's no longer the me generation.
Now
me,
it's
me,
not
me
just the Vietnam War, it's the Afghani War, the Iraqi War, the potential Iranian War, and the other wars. So it's kind of the big war has kind of spawned a bunch of little wars.
That is true.
And,
you know,
the Democratic peace guy, Obama, is creating more wars. What do you make of that?
I think that what is mentioned in the Holy Scripture is true, that he came to visit us, the living God, not very long ago. And the net analysis is, an imperious forest woman has broken my heart.
We will.
They took God out of the country.
A profound, and I must say, theological analysis. So we've been talking with...
my name is James.
Thank you, man.
Thank you. I'm glad these things are coming out to the surface.
I hope so. So I'm talking with...
Santo.
And Santo, you are a man who's been sleeping outside.
Yes.
And you have some concerns about that.
Yeah, I got a ticket recently.
And what was your citation for, as if I didn't know?
For sleeping.
And who gave it to you?
It was a park ranger.
And where did you get it?
Lighthouse Field.
And were there other people with you?
No. I've done this alone and had to move my encampments every couple days.
And have you gotten only one ticket?
One ticket, and I also got a notice where I left my encampment somewhere else recently, so I've had to move.
And how long have you been camping or sleeping? You know, sleeping isn't necessary.
Yeah.
And in a modern world, you save time by not sleeping.
Well, that's true, yeah. But kind of have to.
Yeah, well, that's what they say, but yeah, I can't really believe these homeless people. They're unreliable.
Absolutely.
How long have you been here in Santa Cruz?
Well, I was raised here, but I left for about a year, and I came back and just had to make way recently, about, I think, June.
And you've been camping since, or sleeping and sleeping outside, whatever they call it,
yeah,
since you got back.
Yes, since June.
But you've only gotten one ticket. Does this mean you're just a very clever camper?
Well, like I said, I have to move around a lot, so I guess that could make me clever or just very cautious.
Very mobile,
yes.
Have you had any problems with other homeless people? Have you had any conflicts, thefts, any other problems of that sort?
No, all the ones that I've met, they've advised me on better places to go, and, you know, we seem to try and stick together as best as we can, because that's the only choice we got, right?
So you've actually found their community helpful?
Yes.
And have other people been getting camping tickets that you know of?
Yeah, I've heard of a few others as well.
And you were going to have a united stand, sleep out at the police station, perhaps?
That'd be great.
Well, there is a vigil coming up, which you have a flyer about.
Oh, yes.
Which you're invited to bring your sleeping bag and or just yourself and do the vigil. You can sleep there. You know, it's a little uncertain whether there will be more ticketing or less ticketing there. If they ticket over, it'll be videoed or it'll be documented. So that may be a plus, if you'd like.
That would be really useful. I think I'll see you there.
That'll be Tuesday in front of the county building. You know where the county building is.
Yes.
And in fact, this refers to something that happened 3 or 4 weeks ago when Ed Fry, the attorney activist who helped actually initiated Peace Camp 2010, the protest that for 3 months, at least for a month of that 3 months, provided a real safe sleeping place for homeless people and a toilet facility, a porta potty, and then was dispersed and attacked by police and by deputies and by city authorities. Ed was convicted, and there was a vigil for him. He's currently now under house arrest, and his companion, the homeless activist Gary Johnson, Ground Zero Gary, as I call him, is in jail in Watsonville. He'd like your letters, and I'm going to give his address shortly, so if you want to send him some letters, be good, because he can use some interactions, chatter. Gets pretty boring there in jail. But in any case, there is another vigil coming up, actually. A vigil that's happening on Friday, September 7th at City Hall. I believe it is. I'm going to have to find out what time that vigil is. I think it's at 7, if I'm not mistaken. And you can find more about it by going to Santa Cruz Indie Media, where there are flyers about it. And you can download flyers and pass them on. But I'll this business of raising the issue of how abusive it is for police to go after poor people outside and trying to get people together in a more visible area where they are able to document these abuses by the police. And the police can't just get away with them and then just continue doing what they're doing, destroying homeless property or stashing some of it in the police department for days on end. It can only be gotten out days later. And it's necessary for covering up at night, for example, blankets or protection against the rain, as the rains will be coming. The value of the visible protest is that it not only sends a message to authorities, but it also provides an opportunity to document what is going on. And to some extent, well, it can attract police attention, but can also deter police attention. So that's... There's a kind of a mixed bag there, and I'm looking at the actual flyer on this issue, and let's see, it is at 7 o'clock, and it is on September 7th, that's on Friday, at the Santa Cruz City Hall, it reads, Protesting Homeless Camp Sweeps, Candlelight Tent Vigil, SCPD City Parks, and Santa Cruz City Council are 7 weeks into an attack on camps in the woods. Personal belongings have been trashed and lives are being destroyed. Where are people to sleep? 300 citations, 100 camps destroyed, 150 arrests. And these are stats I take it from the actual Santa Cruz Department Police blog, which you can find if you go online. You can actually read what they say. Not necessarily that their information is that accurate. They may be exaggerating. But this is the first time I have seen police boasting. I regard it as boasting because they are proud of what they're doing and informing the public instead of keeping back public records, which is what I've found is frequently been the case in the past. Though recently, tip of the hat to Tricia Hewsom at the Santa Cruz Police Department, she has been forwarding what I've been requesting, and the City Council, on the other hand, has not. The City Council and staff has not. I'll be talking about that later in the show. Anyway, this protest, this vigil, we'll be coming up on September 7th, 7 p.m., City Hall. Join the community in expressing our sadness and outrage at this disregard for the law, human rights, and dignity. bring a tent if you have one. And Occupy activists are also going to get involved in this. Santa Cruz 11 activists are going to get involved, I think. And hopefully homeless people, because that's really what it's all about. A particular tip of the hat to Brent Adams, homeless himself, who is also a member of the Santa Cruz 11, also a video journalist. Seems to be doing 100 things at the same time and puts out a lot of energy around these issues. Thanks, Brent. He was our guest in the studio last week, and we talked with him. And who knows? He may come in again. You never can tell. Brent shows up at different times. And there is an Occupy Santa Cruz meeting today for those who want to go. It's at 2 o'clock, and it's on the steps of the post office in downtown Santa Cruz. Main post office across from Jamba Juice, if you know where that is, downtown, where I guess Front Street meets Water Street and North River Street and Mission Street. They all come together, and Pacific Avenue. It's sort of a nexus of streets, town clock area. It's the post office right across from the town clock. 2 o'clock today, Santa Cruz, Occupy Santa Cruz meets again. And we're talking a small group. This isn't the massive Occupy of months and months ago. But it is a persistent and dedicated group of people who are interested in a variety of issues: foreclosure, the harassment of homeless people, genetically modified foods, rents, I think, is a concern as well. I mean, there are different issues. They spend far too much time babbling about process and not enough planning substantive actions. But then again, if you have a small group of people who are trying to do 100 things, it's often hard to get them out there to do the actions. And it's really whether the community will do the actions or whether some people will, lead the way, do the actions, and hope that others will follow. That's what we used to do back in the 80s when I was tabling for the Homeless Bill of Rights in front of the old bookshop Coonerty, which was then more sympathetic to homeless people and more sympathetic to homeless activists. Though Neil Coonerty had the same kind of tendencies then, I think, as became more pronounced later. He and his son Ryan Coonerty, of course, Neil's supervisor, Ryan's a council member and former mayor, have been instrumental in pushing anti-homeless laws and policies in Santa Cruz. Although they do fund the charity services out at the Homeless Lack of Services Center. So, let's give them that, shall we? Let's hear some more from... these are interviews on the street. These are actually interviews, I guess, from early August.
Yeah, and 15 of your friends, of course.
I'll get them.
And your name is?
Santo.
Thank you, Santo. So, switching to slow speed, it's now about 6:05 here at Cooper and Pacific on August 3rd. Ah! Everyone is leaving here. And so now I'm rejoining the banner to support the Santa Cruz 11 criminals. No, the Santa Cruz 11. That's who they are. Well, I'm out here right across from the levee about 10:20 on August 3rd, and we have some folks putting their stuff together into carts. We have the infamous Bipolar Bear, a.k.a. Dreamweaver.
Who's Catcher.
Well, Catcher Weaver. Catcher, thank you. Dream Catcher.
You know what Weavers are? You know what Weavers are?
I know very little, actually.
Okay.
What's been happening, Dream Catcher?
Well, as we move around, we look like a little miniature Occupy about ready to, send forth the Bucket Brigade on something. But we're not. We're just the ragtag crew across the galaxy of a civilization nation that was once advanced and now is, kind of limping.
Have you been, driven from spot to spot?
Well, driven? No, I bipedaled my own bipolar cart full of everybody else's stuff, and I get paid very well. But anyway, yes, they've been giving us a ticket, and then they leave, and then we spend the rest of the night where we are without any problems.
And has that happened tonight yet? Or?
No, we haven't seen. The dog guy has cruised by, but he never stops and never says anything.
The dog guy being?
The guy with the canine.
Huh.
Yeah, he's always looking for a number one most wanted.
Bone to chew, perhaps?
No, number one bone. number one bonehead in the community. And we're
you may
not,
well be the...
We're the boneyard, but we're not the boneheads.
I don't have a boner for that guy, I can tell you right now.
An incident happened. I lost my bike today because I let a friend ride it, and he got arrested because of his inappropriate behavior, which, well, we couldn't stand any longer, and it was my job to get him on the bike and get him out of the area because he was just really inappropriate for anything.
And what was inappropriate about his behavior?
Looked like he was about ready to chew somebody's face off.
He was very angry and potentially violent?
Yes.
What was he upset about?
Who knew? He couldn't really tell us, even though he wanted his shit back, and whatever shit that was, well, it probably was shit. Well, he can't find it or discover it, or he thinks he knows who did it. It's not retrieving anything, and I got him to that point, and he said, can I ride your bike?
It's like a bunch of 14-year-olds on the levee, walking home, maybe?
Yeah, that's a squirrel pack.
Meaning?
Meaning the youngsters.
Are they camping or are they just heading home?
They're midnight soap patrol. Bipolar bear patrol juniors. That's what your levy guard.
You think they're outside at the moment?
No. But it is summer.
It's pretty temperate. Any other reports, Dreamcatcher?
I'll try to retrieve my bike from the sheriff's station. And, we're kind of moving on down to George's Beach or whatever that beach is down there.
Well, I should give you, about the vigil for Ed Fry coming up probably.
No, why? What's up?
Let me see if I can get into my car. Well, here we are at the Red Church, talking with Mary, who's got a plate of food with two slices of watermelon, but better than that, you have a tail for us.
Yeah, hello.
Hello, what's cooking?
Hello, SCPD. We're making a formal complaint against Officer Clark, badge number 183. Kiss my white honky ass. You're going down. I don't give a fuck. It's an electioneer.
What exactly did he do, anyway?
He arrested me when I was sober. Fuck.
And when was this?
Tuesday afternoon.
About a week ago, or?
Oh, what? Because I had part of an open container. I was doing disoriented contact because I got up at... You know what? The motherfucker's a Nazi.
Thank you, Mary.
Communist, too.
And I think this may have been previously played. I'm going to have to check on that. And while I do, let's have a brief musical interlude, which may dismay some, but hopefully will please others. This is a Mime Troupe tune from the early 80s for all of you old-timers and you youngsters, too. This is from Fact Wino versus Armageddon Man, a great production, which I saw in Berkeley and played a bit of in prior shows. Here's some more of it.
It was insane. No one stopped the murder.
and our race. Is this to be our legacy? An epitaph no one will read. They would not say their history, their children, their eternity.
Jail and had to pay the fine and serve some time.
This is an apocryphal incident, so thank you very much. Very apocryphal. Now we're talking with
Jack.
Jack, you say 3 or 4 months ago you had an interaction with Officer Winston and some colleagues?
Yes, I was walking through a alleyway, an open way, and I...
Back of Marini's?
Behind Marini's chocolates, and I took my jacket off, it was warm, looked up, and there's about 6 police officers, and they all said, "What's going on?" And accused me of being on drugs, what have you.
You are wearing some pretty fancy dark glasses.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, well, I was the only kind I could find when I went to buy some. But, so these police officers, Officer Winston went ahead and ran me my, license, ID, and came up clear, of course. I'm not a criminal, and he hasn't bothered me since.
So, did he ask your permission, or did he direct you to stay?
He directed me to be quiet, not say anything, and present my ID.
So, in other words, he suggested he had reasonable suspicion you were guilty of some crime?
I'm not sure if he did.
The only basis for detaining you is that there's reasonable suspicion that you are guilty of some crime.
Right. He did say someone had supposedly reported by telephone that there was someone in the alley panhandling or something like that.
And were you that criminal panhandler? Come on, fess up.
No, I was not.
Oh, darn. I thought maybe I could make a bust here, you know.
Panhandling is not technically illegal in Santa Cruz at all times and places. It is simply severely restricted. And so if a cop stops you and says, you know, I want your ID because you're someone has reported panhandling, you say, what exactly was the nature of the report? Panhandling is not illegal in Santa Cruz. It's illegal under certain circumstances. What specifically did they say they saw? Because otherwise, I don't really want to talk with you any further, and I don't really have anything I want to discuss with you. That, of course, involves standing up to somebody with a badge, a gun, an attitude, and a bunch of right-wing militants pushing the city council to empower police to repress and drive out homeless people. So that's, of course, the unfortunate background. But the reality is, you know, it's quite legitimate to say he doesn't know if he's being recorded or not. He doesn't know who else is watching. He really doesn't know who you are yet, unless he does, of course. He may have had previous contact with an officer like this. He may have had contact with you, that is, and know who you are. It's possible to simply say, look, am I free to go? And he's in. And if he says no, he says, well, then am I under arrest or detention? You know, and then what's the charge? He really wants to warrant check you, see. You don't have to provide ID. And if he has no crime to arrest you for, he can't really stop you and keep you. If somebody is suspicious that you are someone, he claims there's been a report of a crime, he can bring the person over and detain you long enough for that person to identify you as being a so-called criminal panhandler. And panhandling is illegal within 14 feet of a building. Even if it's peaceful and quiet, and even silent panhandling is illegal with a sign. Within 14 feet of a building, 14 feet of a crosswalk, 14 feet of a telephone booth, 14 feet of a bench. In other words, 95% of the sidewalk. But it is still legal in other places. And so if a cop comes up with a pretext, like, oh, I'm stopping you because of this, then you say, am I free to go? Just, those are the magic words. Am I free to go? Am I free to go? Am I free to go? And he says, no. They say, okay, what are you charging me with? And, you know, officers can cook up things. But, you know, that's an option you have. So I'm putting that out for those who want to simply say, in their own way, stop bothering me. I'm going about my business. And I don't feel like playing into the police state racket of giving you power that you have no right asserting and that there is no justification to assert. So, here's some more of the interviews from early August.
Yeah, well, it didn't work out that way.
We've been talking with
Jack Kolb.
Thank you, Jack.
All right, thank you, sir.
We're talking with
John.
John, you say that you're a student waiting to return to school who occasionally does some recycling?
I've been living on it this whole summer.
Yeah. And so you live off of restoring recycled cans and getting money for them?
Yes, right now.
And what happened with that? Did you say there was a...
Capitol, the police stopped me and said that load my stuff up, go back to Santa Cruz. If they saw me in Capitol again, I was going to be arrested for stealing.
What was your reaction to this?
I left. What else could I do?
How long ago did you...
This is about 2.5 weeks ago.
Have the Santa Cruz police done this?
That was the Capitola police.
Right, but have the Santa Cruz police repeated anything like this?
No. No. They usually drive by. But I don't go into the blue cans. This is like gas stations and stuff. And so he told me it was still illegal even to go into a can at a gas station.
Through the permission of the gas station?
I didn't actually get permission technically, but they never stopped me.
So that's, I don't know. I don't know what the state of the law is. You should go to the law library and find out if you're interested in front of the county building.
If I was going to have to live that way more or less permanently, I would, but it's so close to school starting, I'm not going to worry about it now.
We've been talking with
John.
Thank you, John.
All right.
Thank you.
And that seems to be a little bit unintelligible. That's probably because we reached the end of the tape. I think I have played some of that stuff before, but I think it's not necessarily bad to play it again. So in case you didn't catch it all the first time, you get a chance to check it out again. And I get a chance to listen to it again myself. So, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM. And we're listening to some earlier stuff, which I haven't had time to play in the past. Let's continue with it. I think these are, I got some more recent stuff here, but as always, you're invited to call in and tell me what's really happening out there here and now in the last week or whatever, and also what's coming up in the next week. If you have some announcements you want to make, there is a Labor Day picnic for the kind of a traditional thing that happens tomorrow, and I think there's going to be some folks out there with Santa Cruz 11 banners encouraging people to be aware of the ongoing repression in Santa Cruz that's really exemplified by the Santa Cruz 11. But also, you can see it more dramatically with the destruction of the homeless camps that's going on. And Linda LeMaster's case is coming up. She's the woman who's charged with illegal lodging, goes to trial on October 15th. And that's not too far away. And for those of you who are old-timers, there's the Activists Strike Back, the trial of two mayors here in Santa Cruz, taken to federal court. That'll be happening at the end of October. We have a caller. Yo, caller, hey. You're on Free Radio.
Hello, is this Robert Norris?
It certainly is.
Yes, this is Rick. Rick, I just got this number from Matthew Embry.
Oh, yeah. You're on the air, by the way, Rick, in case you...
Yes, he's listening to us right now.
Cool.
He's on the internet, and I'm calling regarding about opening up a nonprofit organization for the homeless.
Uh huh.
And I'm thinking about to have a tent city. I already got the real estate to help me on that to get a lot.
Uh-huh.
And, I'm trying to help other homeless people.
You're homeless yourself.
Yes, I am. I'm over at the shelter right now.
You're over what?
It's a great place.
You're where?
I'm at the shelter right now.
This is what city are you calling from?
I'm calling from Santa Cruz.
Oh, okay. Okay, fair enough.
A friend of mine that's a friend of yours, he's in prison right now. He's listening to us.
Cool.
He's a good man. He's the one that gave me this, your number, your name. And he's my support, and he's like a sponsor.
Uh huh.
That he's helping me with this.
And so, Rick, have you heard about the vigil that's coming up on September 7th? The 7 o'clock at City Hall vigil to support and stand up to the destruction of homeless camps and homeless property and so forth that's going on around the city.
Okay, I'm trying to clean up the city, and I'm trying to help the homeless, so they can have a place to stay while they're waiting to get in the shelter.
I got you. And I'm saying, have you heard about the vigil that's happening on September 7th at City Hall?
Okay.
Have you heard about that?
No, I haven't.
Oh.
This is the first time I heard about it.
All righty. Well, then it's good that I'm mentioning it, because that's a good place to get together with sympathetic people who might be interested in what you're doing, invite other people to come from the Homeless Lack of Services Center, as I call the Homeless Services Center. And do you often go to the St. Francis Soup Kitchen?
Yeah, I've been there to eat lunch.
Uh-huh. And do you go to Emmeline Street or places like that?
I've been there, but I haven't been. I've been over at San Hunter Block.
What?
I've been over at the San Hunter Block, where the hospital is at, like the clinic.
Oh, okay. This is always many people have had this idea in the past, and it's not. It's a good idea. Usually it gets lost because they don't, the city does not want to have a homeless campground. That is to say, city bureaucrats and conservative people in this town don't want it. So what you really have to do is not go to the authorities and ask them. You have to get the community to determine that this is an important thing to happen and actually make it happen, sort of like Occupy
right.
Santa Cruz did. That means
I have another person. I have another person that is working on it herself,
right.
And she already had Oprah Winfrey.
Right. Well, you know, that's great. I'm glad to hear it. What I want to definitely take whatever steps you think will be helpful. Setting up a nonprofit is a very extensive activity, and also costs money. And it also subjects you to a whole series of rules that usually defeat the very purpose of the campground you're trying to set up. I mean, but that isn't necessarily true. It could, you know, it could
right.
be good. You should definitely get more authoritative information from people who've tried to do it. But usually, my advice to everybody, which nobody asked for, of course, but I give anyway, is, you know, set up a campground. You know, don't sit around waiting for permission. Ask for forgiveness. If you get enough people who want to do it, that's what Occupy did. And they did it for two and a half months. And they set up the longest campground in Santa Cruz, well, at least in a decade and a half here. So, well, since Camp Paradise, anyway. And Camp Paradise did the same thing.
Have you heard of American Dream Real Estate?
No, I haven't.
Okay, I got this young lady named Christine. She is working on trying to get me a lot. She's sending me an email of these different lots, and so far I haven't seen one that I like.
I understand. What, are you going to buy a lot?
I'm trying to use a nonprofit organization grant to do that.
Do you have a grant?
No, not yet.
Okay.
I'm going to work on it.
Okay. Well, listen, I wish you luck with that. I got to tell you, I've seen this kind of efforts before, and I'm not optimistic, but I'm hopeful. You know, things can happen that never happened before. In the meantime, I would suggest you check this event out on Friday at 7 o'clock at City Hall. I suggest you come to a Huff meeting if you're interested in the stuff we're doing.
Okay.
You know about Huff, right?
I already talked to the secretary of Ryan, I forgot his last name.
Coonerty?
The councilman.
Yeah, Ryan Coonerty.
Huh?
Ryan Coonerty, perhaps, is the council member you're talking about.
Yes. That's the one I sent him a letter. I wrote a letter, and his secretary called, and she said she's going to talk to him about it. About this nonprofit organization.
Right.
See, if I use a nonprofit organization, I will be able to get a grant.
Yeah, yeah. I wish you luck with it. I'm sorry. I have to tell you. And is there? How have you been sleeping outside yourself?
Yes, I have. And now I'm inside of a loft.
Loft will be closing on the 15th, right?
No, they're going to do it week-to-week basis.
How can they do a week-to-week basis if they're going to be filled up with Paige Smith people?
Yeah.
Huh? That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yes,
what?
That's what's happening. And
if that's what's happening...
I'm going to do the best I can to help them.
Wait a minute. I appreciate that, Rick, but let me ask you, you say that the Paul Lee Loft is... Are you from Paige Smith? Have you been in Paige Smith before? Is that where you're coming from?
No, I haven't.
So are they telling you that they will allow you to stay in the Paul Lee Loft even though Paige Smith people are going to be displacing everyone, as I understand it?
I'm pretty sure that's going to happen.
What is going to happen?
I understand this. The tent city is going to be take a while to...
Right, I'm not talking about the tent city. I'm talking about your being able to be in the Paul Lee Loft. Are they saying they are accepting people in the Paul Lee Loft even though it's going to be completely filled up with Paige Smith people?
I think so.
Huh, interesting. Well, I would love to get more information about this. It's interesting to hear. And as for your tent city, tent city is always a great idea in the sense that at least provides emergency shelter for people.
Great.
So I would encourage you to keep...
Can I have your support?
Well, you always have. I support such things. I don't think Ryan Coonerty is going to be very helpful in that. His main accomplishments have been anti-homeless laws. So, but if he suddenly...
Basically, it's going to be big enough for the homeless that can be in one spot. And we will have, I will have the chief of police to hear this. I'm going to have the sheriff to hear this.
Right. Well, I encourage you to proceed. I got to tell you, though, that until you actually get a bunch of people behind you who aren't the chief of police, who aren't the city council, because they'll talk you to death. Or else they'll
right.
smile at you and nod as you talk. But unless you get power at the base with the community,
right.
it's a difficult situation. I appreciate you trying, Rick. And if you want to get in touch, come to the Huff meeting on Wednesday. I'll be there at 10 o'clock at the Sub Rosa. You know where that is?
Where?
703 Pacific, the Sub Rosa Cafe. 10 o'clock on Wednesday.
10 o'clock Wednesday?
10 o'clock in the morning on Wednesday. Yeah, show up
this
there.
Wednesday.
Right, and again, our main focus is on the criminalization of poor people now, not idea
sure.
of somehow begging from authorities the right to set up a, you know, get a piece of property from a real estate person somewhere in the distant future, which, you know, if someone can do it, that's great. But in the meantime, people are getting fucked with all over the city, and that's our concern at the moment. So,
right, that is my concern, because I don't want these homeless to have to worry about these police officers. The ones are having a bad day, giving out tickets.
Right.
I want them to be safe.
Yeah. 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 I hear you.
I want these homeless to be safe, be able to have a safe place to sleep, be able to be in the tent, even though they don't have a tent. They don't have to have a tent.
Right on.
They got a tent.
Right on.
They'll have a tent because it's from the community. You see, I like Santa Cruz.
I understand.
I love Santa Cruz.
I got you. Let me ask you, have you gotten any tickets sleeping outside yourself?
Say it again?
Have you gotten any tickets sleeping outside yourself?
No.
How long have you been sleeping outside?
Almost a month.
And so have you been lucky, or are you friends with the police? I mean, how did that work?
No. I don't know anybody from the police department.
I understand.
I never had tickets. I just consider myself blessed.
Do you sleep
with God?
Do you sleep alone, or do you sleep with other people?
I sleep with other people, and I try to make myself quiet.
Well, listen, Rick, I appreciate what you're trying to do. Do come to the Huff meeting if you want. You can also
okay.
show up at the vigil.
703 Pacific.
It's at 703 Pacific. It's like you know, toward the beach on the right beyond the Saturn Cafe, right beyond Taco Bell, if you know where those places are downtown.
Okay, I know where Taco Bell is.
Yeah, it's about a block beyond Taco Bell toward the beach on the other side of the street. So that's called
okay,
the Sub Rosa Cafe.
Like towards the bike church.
Towards what?
On the other side of the bike church?
It's where the bike church is, exactly. That's a better way of putting it. Thank you. Yeah, that's at the bike church area.
Okay, then it's Pacific and Spruce.
Right, sure. I can never remember the name of that suit. I always think it's Sycamore, but yeah, Spruce probably is what it is. So
okay.
come on down.
I'll be there.
Well, sounds good. Bring people with you. You can even bring Ryan Coonerty if you want.
Well, if he's up to it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'd be very surprised, but he's welcome to show up.
And if you want to, I can ask the mayor. Or ask the secretary if the mayor can show up.
Sure. Don Lane is... We would be very interested in talking with Don Lane. Anyway,
Don who?
That's the name of the mayor, Don Lane.
Oh, Don Lane.
Don Lane is the name of the mayor.
Is it Lane, like Street Lane?
Like, you know, Strawberry Lane, or, you know, L-A-N-E,
okay.
Lane, yeah.
L-A-N-E.
Yeah, Don Lane, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I wish that Matthew Embry would come down to help out.
Well, Matthew is
he's helping out on his end.
Matthew is in Fresno.
Yes, he's listening right now.
Yeah, I know, and I'm glad he is, and I thank you for calling
I'm
in,
glad
Rick.
He is too.
And we'll talk to you on Wednesday if you show.
Okay, and. I'll be down there with a bike.
If you have any updates, you can leave them at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom number, 423...
Hold on. Let me...
423-HUFF, H-U-F-F.
Okay, 423...
H-U-F-F.
H-U-F-F.
You got it. Thanks
okay.
for calling, man.
And what's it called?
HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom.
Okay, I'll put that all in capital.
Just call it Homeless United. That's an easy remember way, thing to remember.
I'll just put that on HUFF.
Sounds good. Talk to you later.
Well, thank you, Robert. And we have this on air.
You've been on air, and now you're going off air, and I'm going to continue, and I'll talk to you more on Wednesday.
All right, I'll talk to you more about it.
All righty. Bye-bye. All right. And call-in lines are open. It's 11 o'clock, just about. Call-in number is 427-3772, 427-3772. And, yeah, come to the Huffman if you want to chat more with Rick about his adventures in officialdom and realty land, looking for a property and a nonprofit for a campground, which is... it's just a dream that homeless people have had for a long time, or some of us, and housed people have also thought that's a pretty good idea. I'm a housed person, and I thought that's a pretty good plan. It's just been constantly frustrated, even in those areas when community support has been built. And it's there's always somebody who comes on the scene and says, hey, what about a homeless campground? You know, and it's, you would think, yeah, why not? And the answer is you look at the history of what has happened when that's been raised before, and you, it's best to do that before you do it again, because I think that's a way of trying to anticipate the roadblocks that are usually likely to come and the bullshit you're likely to face. Not necessarily. You know, it's always a new day and to some extent, but it's also, there's the same, unfortunately, repressive forces are continuing to do their thing. So you are... it's a difficult situation. Let's hear some more, possibly a second hearing of stuff from the street.
Brent Adams is describing how he set up a tent in front of the courthouse.
And the camera's running the whole time on the whole thing.
And this is a discussion that a lot of the meetings I've had with people, aside from the Wednesday Huff meeting you heard me talk to Rick about a moment ago, are at the courthouse, because I've been, and 11 others have been dragged down to the courthouse, and actually several dozen other people have been supporters, every, sometimes two times a week, certainly at least two or three times a month, for the last 6 months, around the issues of the Santa Cruz 11, which is an attempt, a successful attempt in many ways, to intimidate and repress political activists in Santa Cruz, who actually are not really doing any remarkably radical things. It'd be nice if we were. We're not. But we're still getting shafted, dragged into court proceedings that could lead up to 7 years in jail. And the next hearing for us, I think it's coming up actually in, it's either mid-September or early October for several of the Santa Cruz 11, not myself, but... two members, Lauren Doe, Cameron Lauren Doe, and Angel Franklin Alcantara, who are trying to get their cases dismissed. Every single case that's gone before a judge after a preliminary hearing has been dismissed for lack of evidence. And it's just, but you can imagine, though, the amount of time and energy people have to put into going to court, hiring attorneys, explaining to their friends why they're accused of serious felonies, conspiracy charges. And what it is, of course, is it's an attempt to blacken the activists' community and frighten them from any kind of direct actions, which wealthy property owners, I'm not talking about people who own their own homes, I'm talking about people who own their own banks, are afraid of. Anyway, here's one of the activists and one of the Santa Cruz 11 is Brent Adams, and he was at a hearing for the Santa Cruz 11 downtown. It could also be, there have also been cases recently involving Ed Frey and Gary Johnson, which I've mentioned before. Ed Frey is the attorney, Gary Johnson, a homeless activist, sort of the remaining people from the Peace Camp 2010. Linda LeMaster is the last of that group, who are facing trials or have already been tried and are facing jail and have to go to court hearings. And people show up in court to support them. I often show up in a bathrobe with a teddy bear in an attempt essentially to add a little humor and also a little satire to the proceedings, because as far as I'm concerned, the right to sleep is really the issue here in a lot of these cases and trials. even the Santa Cruz 11, who are accused of conspiracy to vandalize and occupy a building, which is completely false, the 11 of us involved. There's no conspiracy to do any of that. There was a general support for exposing the greed and abuses of Wells Fargo Bank, for exposing the failure of the city to provide shelter for hundreds of homeless people, even though vacant buildings abound, even though there's prospects of the kind of campground you heard Rick talking about all over the place. And that was done as a peaceful direct action that ended peacefully. And instead, months later, people are being prosecuted who weren't even arrested at the time for essentially some of us walking in and reporting on the whole thing, which I did on the radio, as you hear now. So here's some more from Brent and from the other activists talking about issues at court.
You can't have that here. I was like, oh, it's my sign. It's 6x3. It's a sign on all four corners that people can live in that.
And Brent is talking about the use of a tent as a sign, as a sort of a First Amendment display. Police were trying to remove him or the deputies from in front of the courthouse when that was exactly a First Amendment, you would think, a First Amendment supported activity, because the whole case for Gary Johnson and Ed Frye is about the need of people to be able to camp legally, or at least sleep legally, if not wherever they want, at least somewhere.
Nobody's living in it. I said it's a sign, and it went on and on. It was really fun, though.
This was in front of the courthouse right before the hearing.
Yes, yeah. It was like this crisis. Probably about 8:30. Anyway,
this is all on video.
Yeah.
Do we get to see it?
I'm just telling you a story.
I want to hear the story. America wants to hear the story. Thank you, Brent.
So here I am. It's August 18th, 2012. It's a pleasant, somewhat warm Saturday, about 9:40. I'm here at the in Felton, talking with
Jeff Pickerel, also known as Ducky.
And should I call you Ducky, or is it just Ducky?
Familiar, yeah.
I did play this interview before. This is an interview with a Ron Paul activist who is heading for... or was heading at the time for the Republican convention. Paul, of course, got ousted from even being allowed to speak because he wouldn't allow his comments to be pre-censored by the Republican fat cats who run the thing. Ironically, Clint Eastwood, or Squint, as I call him, former mayor of Carmel and, of course, famous movie guy and also right-wing Republican supporter, that some of you may remember, he spent some time addressing a chair with an Obama placard on it. I didn't actually see or hear the Eastwood speech, but I read about it subsequently. And what struck me, and perhaps what struck other listeners to this show, is that Eastwood denounced Obama for expanding the war in Afghanistan and not bringing the troops home sooner, which, of course, is... exactly the opposite of what both Obama and Romney claim they want to do. So, in a way, right on Clint, you know, although he had other stuff to say that I didn't agree with. So, not sure how he got into this. Maybe it's time for me to take another one of those questionable musical breaks and get back. And let's see if I can do that with more of... the obscure but still beloved Santa Cruz Mime Troupe from 30 years ago.
My dreams have died.
So I mentioned that Gary Johnson, Ground Zero Gary as I call him, is currently in jail at the Watsonville Roundtree facility, and that you can put money on his books if you want, and the way to do that is about to be given to you here. If you haven't got a pencil and you can't remember this stuff, go to the Santa Cruz Indie Media website. And on the extreme right side of the website is my story, Getting Through to Ground Zero Gary Johnson in Jail. And it gives you some of the information I'm going to repeat here. He has a release date of October 31st, so that he should be out in 2 months, according to the jailer I spoke with. His number, which you should write on any letter you send to him, is, and go get a pencil if you want to write this down, because Gary would appreciate letters, and I'll repeat this again while you, for those of you who don't have pencils immediately available, but his number isn't hard to remember. It's S-228822. S, and then Sam, as in Sam, dash 228822. And it's at Roundtree Facility, R-O-N-T-R-E-E, not Round, but Roundtree Facility, at 90 Roundtree Lane, Watsonville, 95076. Watsonville, 95076. And if you want to visit him, you have to go get a... You have to get him to put your name on a form. He can only get 6 visitors a month, but if you want, send him a letter and ask him. But if you do, you have to give your driver's license number and your birth date, and he puts that on a form, and then you can come visit him. But you can only visit him in Watsonville, and you can only visit him on Sundays from 1 to 3, I believe, of the visiting hours. That's what I was told. It's kind of strange for a minimum security facility, but then I don't know what they're doing out there. I don't know what he's doing in jail anyway. He was convicted of illegal lodging, which means he slept essentially outside the courthouse with many other people, in essence, with a sign that said, sleep is not a crime. And actually, he was more recently arrested for that this last winter and convicted of that and sentenced to 2 years in jail for 4 nights of sleeping on a bench. They were punishing him for First Amendment activity, for trying to raise the issue to the community, which is, here's a situation where you have 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people in Santa Cruz, shelter for less than a couple hundred at most, if you consider even the programs that exist, not just the emergency shelter. There's actually 0 emergency shelter. You have to be on a waiting list. I guess there's maybe 5 or 10 beds, and maybe given... There's private emergency shelter for, if you go to the Red Church on, I think it's Sunday through Wednesday or Monday through Thursday, they take about 10 or 15 people. But, you know, out of hundreds, that ain't, chances are pretty low. So that's why Gary's in jail. And again, to write to him, it's S-228822. That's his number, S as in silly, dash 228822, Roundtree Lane Facility, R-O-N-T-R-E-E, Roundtree, 90 Roundtree Lane, Watsonville, 95076. And you can put money on his books in Santa Cruz. It'll cost you a couple of bucks to do it. I'm told the machine there might not be working, so you might want to call the jail first before you go in. But that's the way to do it. He also has a blog that I don't know if he has any access to a computer over there in Roundtree. I hadn't heard that he does. His website is Peacecamp 2010 Insider. Peacecamp 2010 Insider, all one word, .blogspot.com. Peacecamp 2010 Insider, .blogspot.com. And there's also a jail website, which I'm not going to read. It's long and... just long. So, that's how you reach him. And now let's hear some of... I had an interview with him outside the courthouse on the 24th. This was before he was ordered to go to court later, to go to jail later that day. He showed up with protesters and supporters, and they wouldn't take him in the jail. So he went over to the courthouse to ask the judge what to do, and he was immediately seized in the corridors and shackled, and the man who tried to video him was forced out of the courtroom, or I should say out of the court corridors. He wasn't in any of the courtrooms where you have to ask permission of the judge to video, but you don't need permission in the corridors of the courthouse, although apparently they're trying to use some special obscure addition to the code that will permit them to ban photography, ban audio in the corridors of the courthouse. And that may be something that puts me in jail the next time I go into the court. I don't know, because I don't intend to obey such a thing. Don't know where they're getting it from. Anyway, let's hear some of that.
Yes, it is August 24th, 2012. We're in front of the courthouse. It's about 8:20. I guess we're about to go in pretty shortly. We have to take a while to go through the... Having set this up, now we have to dismantle it. We have a table. Or leave someone here. We have a table with Free Gary Johnson signs, Sleep is Not a Crime, coffee, and there are about five or six of us here in support of Gary. It's a kind of an overcast morning, as it often is in the summer in Santa Cruz, and Gary Johnson is going to court today to face an interrupted sentence that he was sentenced to for an incident that happened 2 years ago where he was leading a protest, peaceful protest, on these very steps against the sleeping ban laws and the criminalization of homeless people outside. So that's what's happening today. He has to resume his six-month sentence if all matters continue as they are likely to in Judge Gallagher's Department 2. So we're out here in the corridors. Gary, any comments for Free Radio fans?
Not really.
Fair enough. Ed, you presented this case to the court. What's your take on what's going on? You've already said that you were concerned the right to privacy has never been addressed by any court, including this one. And also, I guess when Gary pointed out he needed to be able to sleep prior to going to jail if he wants to prepare for it, the judge said threatened him with further incarceration and then moved up the time to 3 o'clock today.
Yeah, it's typical of this oppressive court.
The time when he has to report to jail.
All of it, yeah, including the time he's got to go to jail.
You yourself are under house arrest. Is that an alternative for Gary? Homeless arrest, houseless arrest?
That's up to the sheriff and to Gary, not the courts. The courts don't have any power over that. I don't have any power over that. The sheriff will probably ask him if he wants to do that, and Gary will then have his answer.
What will your answer be, Gary? Do you know?
For what?
If they offer to give you a fancy, attractive bracelet instead of sending you to jail, provided you pay $18 a day, what will be your response?
They're arresting me, prosecuting me, and incarcerating me for protesting. Why would I give up more civil rights by letting them put a tracker on me 24/7 and allow them to search me and everyone around me 24/7? If I'm going to take a stand on constitutional grounds, they can take their bracelet and stick it up their ass.
You've been in jail already, and both of you have been in jail already. Do you want to describe what it's like in there for folks out here who don't know what it's about?
It's a lot like out here, but with more guards. But it's really similar, especially for the poor.
Now, you yourself are a vegan or vegetarian?
Vegetarian. Can't really be vegan. I was a vegan until I moved to Santa Cruz.
And what impact will that your diet have when you go to jail? Will you be able to do that? Do you need support from the community?
Well, I'm not going to sign up for vegetarianism in jail because they make you go through a process, and if they won't take my word for it, they can stick it up their ass. If I have a chance, I'll trade the meat products for other food products that are less objectionable and survive that way.
Were you successful in doing that when you were previously in jail? You were in jail for what, several weeks the first time, and then you were again re-jailed awaiting trial on this two-year sentence that he's threatened to reinstitute.
Yeah, for like months and months and months. It actually gives you something to do. Trade food.
Will you be giving us regular reports on the scene in the jail, all the exciting accommodations, stories from there?
How do I do that? It's illegal for people to communicate with people in jail, unless they get to read everything, which, again, they can stick me there.
First while attorney Ed Fry, who can serve as a go-between.
Well, I don't know, with all this trap wire and NDAA and, you know, NSA reading every email, fax, phone call, you know.
You're reluctant to do that.
Well, why bother communicating anymore? I mean, until the Constitution is restored, it's not safe to speak in America.
Anyone else have questions, queries, comments, free radio?
Do you want people to bring you books, and you want put money put on the books, and what else would you request? I don't know if you can request visitors either, no, at times. So how much of that do you need?
So there's a form to fill out for visiting, which, again, the constitutional thing, they crawl up the ass of everybody that wants to go in there. So I'd rather people didn't subject themselves to that abuse. You can't send books unless they're from the publisher, because people smuggle things in, and books is one way to do it. So they don't allow books unless they come from a publisher. If somebody sends me books from a publisher, great. I'll read them or give them to somebody. But, you know, I can get by with nothing, so that's not a concern. If people want to put money on my books, great. But I can get by, so don't worry.
And putting money on books means not sticking money inside the books with a secret arrangement with the publisher. It means he's talking about a different kind of books, talking about if you go to the jail and give money to the little machine or however they're taking the money for it's given to prisoners to buy things in the commissary, stamps and food between meals and so forth. That's what's meant by putting money on books. And that can be done, as I said before, in the Santa Cruz County Jail. I believe it's a 24-hour-a-day process, although I was told somebody tried to do it, and it's done through a machine more recently. Not last time I put money in someone's books, there was they took it at the counter, but I guess there's now a machine, I'm told there's a machine. But the machine is not always working, so there's, as I mentioned before, that's kind of problematic. But you can pay a publisher to send money to send a book to Gary in jail. I think you have to do it through a publisher rather than through a bookstore, although I'm not entirely sure on that. And you can call the Santa Cruz County Jail to find out. But, hey, send books to Gary. Reading is a good thing and a way to pass the time.
I mean, yeah, it'd be nice, but everybody else is hard up, so, you know.
There's lots of westerns and romance novels in jail.
Yeah, that's right. Becky, you know that. You've been in there, and I'm going to be doing what you did.
Yeah, starting a GA inside your cell block, teaching everybody all the hand signals and how to hold meetings so that they can deal with their issues.
No, I'm not into the meeting thing. That's a symptom of it's actually the worst part of what we have. Anyway, let's not get into that. Meetings, no. But starting study groups for, like, police misconduct law and litigation or what to do with their lawyer situation or their ticket situation, especially if they have money. They can talk to Ed because he could use the gigs, right? But mostly just to find out what's happening to everybody in there and what to do about it, because nobody else is doing it. So as long as I'm there and I got nothing to do, might as well.
Is there an expectation that you'll serve part of your time or the full time, and how much time is that?
This sentence is two-thirds time because it happened before October of 2011. I think that's when the cutoff for
half-time. They gave me half-time.
Yeah.
90 days.
Well, you're special.
Well, I don't know. You'll get it, too, if I got it.
Watch out, because they may have messed up on the paperwork. Because from what I understand, if you were, even if the sentence occurs after the cutoff date, before that, it's two-thirds time. So anyway, it's either half-time or two-thirds time, which is, I don't know, before the end of this year, I'll get out, in theory, unless I, you know, misbehave or something. But it's legal to sleep in jail, so.
The judge is actually helping you out here as part of his humanitarian plan.
No, he's not helping me out, but it is legal to sleep in jail as opposed to everywhere else.
Sleep at night.
Yeah, and you can't sleep it during the day. There's a sign posted. So basically, the jail has inverted rules for sleep as opposed to the city. The city says you can't sleep at night, and the jail says you can't sleep during the day, but they don't enforce it in jail. So I don't know.
So how much time do you think you're facing starting today at 3?
Well, I got a 6-month sentence on this one, and it's two-thirds time, and I've already served, like, I don't know, a month maybe?
84 days.
84 days so far on this sentence, not the last sentence.
No, you've served 16 days at first,
And then the other days, I don't know whether you get credit for those other days you spend or not.
Which days?
With the days, because you were in December, January of 20.
No, that would be for the other case.
That was for the other case. So you've got only 16 days credit.
Both of these were sleep cases.
Well, I was in there for like 3 weeks or something.
Two weeks and 2 days. I was in there for 2 weeks. You were in there for 2 weeks and 2 days.
Oh. Okay, well, I don't know.
So 70, probably 76 days, if you get the 90-day thing.
Yeah, so I'll get out before the end of the world.
Oh, maybe.
Before the end of the world.
Any other thoughts or questions or comments?
Adams was just escorted out for using the First Amendment right to videotape this event, which just happened, interviewing Gary Johnson.
Let's go outside with him, shall we? Oh, now we're outside in the courtroom, having been...
This was another instance where Gary was, Brent Adams was harassed for videoing. I have not heard of anybody else recently being harassed. I think Becky Johnson was harassed at one point months ago for videoing, though I haven't seen a lot of other people videoing that. People have got their little, a lot of cell phones have video capacity these days, smartphones and so forth. Appears to me that it may be that Brent is getting particularly the focus of this harassment. Although he's a very, though he's strong and passionate in what he does, he's also very concerned with creating a broad coalition in the community. So he often asks very respectfully guards and deputies if it's okay if he does it. He gets their permission. Then some other deputy comes over and says, no, you can't do that. And tries to grab his camera or shove him out and that sort of thing. And it shows you why arbitrary power is such a license for abuse. And it also shows you how activists are the focus of this kind of resentment and also this kind of inappropriate assertion of power. At least that's one way of viewing it. Brent, I talked earlier about Brent's trying. He actually tried later in the day to video Gary's coming back to the court because he was refused admission in jail later that afternoon, even though ordered to appear there by the judge. And when Brent tried to video it, he was... approached, you might even say attacked, by the deputies. Again, these are from second-hand accounts, so I can't really tell you exactly what happened, but let's hear some more of these. This is all about August 24th, the day that Gary Johnson went to jail.
He's been excluded for videoing, which is not illegal in the corridors. I don't know what the deputies are thinking.
So, and they put cash in the machine?
Sorry.
Yeah.
And Gary's raking a sign,
okay.
Sleep
Brent
is not a crime. So, Brent, what just happened to you?
He just selectively kicked me out of the hallway, saying I can't film in any of the areas of the courthouse.
Oh, well, here you are doing it again. We better have you arrested immediately.
Apparently it's not the grounds of the courthouse out here, according to that officer.
Do you name the name of the officer or the deputy?
He's the same one who took my camera away before.
I see. See, maybe he has a thing for your camera, Brent. It could be.
My camera's very dangerous. He got the right camera.
And that's my other one at home, right?
Well,
a camera.
I think there's no special... There's a policy about no cameras, no tape recorders, and no audio or video inside the courtrooms.
Sure.
But there's no clear policy in the corridors. The court, as far as I know, do you know anything about that, Ed?
No. The last time I even thought about it was about two or so years ago when they were kicking somebody out of the hallway there.
Chris Doyen, perhaps.
Maybe. I'm not sure who it was. And I never followed up because it never came to a head. So it should be, certainly, you should be free to take a picture and take a video in the corridor outside the courtroom so long as you're not disrupting things such that you interrupt courtroom proceedings. So.
Yeah, and usually, in fact, in the past, it's been not routinely, but frequently granted to do private audio recordings of court proceedings for reporter notes or for a defendant's own notes or for a witness's notes. That's been almost systematically denied me in the last two or three years. Mainstream media, on the other end, usually has very little trouble getting access to the court if they file papers, whereas alternative media has a lot of difficulty.
But that's not the corridors of the court from which Gary was excluded. It is the inside the courtrooms themselves.
Yeah. It's just another issue we're going to have to look into. So
we've been talking with
Ed Fry.
Thanks, Ed. Any comments about this?
It's just pretty outrageous, the whole thing that's going on in Santa Cruz and in other communities against the homeless is just outrageous. It would have been unthinkable in a democracy, but we have to try to work to make a democracy.
Which you've been working on for about 35 or more years. Right?
Yes, but it hasn't been proved in that time.
You're an activist with the Peace and Freedom Party?
Yes, I am.
And how long? And is the Peace and Freedom Party has been sort of essentially excluded from the ballot in some respects?
Yes, because in November, the only candidate we'll have on our ballot here will be the presidential candidate. They're running the presidential races because it's federal. You don't have to have the top two, but all the other races are going to reflect just the top two candidates from the primary. So they could be two Republicans, two Democrats, or one of each. In three races across the state, we were able to become one of the top two simply by the fact that we had write-in candidates, write-in against an unopposed candidate.
In the past, at primaries, whoever won would still be able to go on the ballot in November. Even if people lost, they would go on the ballot as the candidate of the minor party. Now all the minor parties are excluded, apparently, from, as I understand it, from the any office but the presidency on the ballot because of a new law passed in California by the legislature, which essentially benefits Republicans and Democrats and excludes all third parties. I may have that somewhat wrong, but that's my ignorant understanding. If anyone has a better understanding, please do call in. You are tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM. I'm Robert Norris. The name of the show is Bathrobespierre's Broadsides. You're talking to Robespierre, or rather Bathrobespierre, because of my fine bathrobe wear at protests and sometimes to court. And if you have more information, you can call in, 427-3772. 427-3772 is the number here. And, I'm just waiting for that phone to go tinky, tinky, dingy, dingy.
But we have to get rid of this law if we're going to have any kind of third-party movement. It's squashing any third party.
This came into effect when?
It was 2 years ago in June, people voted for Proposition 14 under the... they didn't talk about top two in that. They just talked about people being able to vote for anybody they wanted to in the primary, and that kind of enticed people.
Deceptive advertising.
Oh, yes, but that's the norm.
But would it matter? I mean, it is so rare that Peace and Freedom or Libertarian or American Independent Party ever gets significant opportunity because of the reality that we're in a plutocracy and not a democracy.
That's true. And the Fourth Estate, the media is owned by the plutocracy. So we don't get equal access to media.
Plutocracy, of course, means, for all of you non-scholars, rule by money or by the rich.
Or any of that. So what we want to see is some kind of level playing field where there's equal media and there is...
pie in the sky, sugar plum ponies.
That's what it would seem like. Democracy is actually, you know, it. And yeah.
Democracy last October, November, and December here in Santa Cruz, or a little movement in that direction with the Occupy movement.
There was definitely movement in that direction, and there may be again, but the suppression has been so outrageous, and there is no organized opposition to the district attorney, as far as I can see.
Bob Lee, our favorite.
Yeah, once a favorite. I mean, to tell you the truth, I actually thought Bob Lee was a pretty good guy until this stuff started happening. And so now...
He's been prosecuting marijuana distribution centers for years under the theory that the only legal place to buy marijuana is at a collective that you are a participating member in. In essence, he was violating Proposition 215. His DAs were in the cases of... Well, there are a number of cases, but Roger Mensch was the most outstanding case. He prosecuted him twice, cooperated with a third prosecution, drove Mensch out of his Felton dispensary. I think that policy may have changed, mainly perhaps because of higher court decisions and perhaps some pressure from the Santa Cruz community, but the favored people in Santa Cruz who he is political buddies with, and I don't know that includes necessarily personally the Greenway Marijuana Distribution Center, has exactly the same situation but doesn't get prosecuted. So it's interesting. Not that anybody should be prosecuted, of course. But anyway, Lee is a very amiable fellow. I will say that for him.
Yes, and I didn't actually follow the marijuana cases and so forth, so I can't say anything. The homeless cases have been the outrage for me, and I see that you've got a whole history of his prosecutions that I'm not aware of.
Well, just ones I was involved in because I wrote stories about this particular case. And I also actually made Public Records Act requests to his office to show that there is actually an increase in the war against marijuana, not a decrease, locally and nationally. And it's just, there's the illusion of some kind of liberal scene here. But in fact, the reality is it could be because of the funding of police departments, the continued foreclosure funding, war on terror, whatever it is. It's if you give a machine enough fuel, it will continue to run all over the place, regardless of the claims and desires of the citizenry.
Well, it's ironic that people will have to vote for Proposition 34 on the ballot.
But I didn't mean foreclosure funding. I meant forfeiture, the thing that allows, essentially funds police departments and other agencies. I may mention this later in the tape, too. This is a conversation with Maureen Smith of the Peace and Freedom Party, a longtime activist in Santa Cruz and a supporter of homeless civil rights. I've been on different sides of issues with Maureen on occasion when she's gotten involved with the bureaucracy, particularly around the Dolphin Lee boondoggle, now called the Nueva Vista Project, which essentially destroyed housing in order to create a sort of a showcase project for Mercy Charity Housing back in about 13 years ago. A brief historical note here. But Maureen has also been an activist who is a longtime supporter of poor and homeless people in such ancient struggles as the Scott Creek Bluff struggle, in the late 70s, after having been driven out of Santa Cruz, vehicular dwellers tried to form a community at Scott Creek Bluff, north of Davenport, and had their entire vehicles towed and were dragged away by police. And they then descended on the county building and occupied the county building. Of an occupation of 1977 Christmas. They were arrested, charged, biggest mass misdemeanor trial in Santa Cruz history that I've ever heard of. And they were almost all acquitted in essentially what was called a jury nullification defense, where they said, yeah, we're guilty of violating this law, but this is why we did it. And the jury refused to convict them because they felt that their homes had been stolen, the deputies had acted inappropriately, the authorities were prosecuting maliciously. This was under a bunch of liberals. I think Phil Harry was the district attorney way back in the 70s, before the evil reign of Art Danner or... Bob Lee, for that matter. And it tends to show that with respect to homeless issues, both Republicans, Democrats, liberals, and conservatives in power are on the same side. You see the same kind of deformation happening at the national level with the national terror state that we now have that uses terrorism against its own citizens, denying them rights, shredding the Constitution, escalating foreign wars while claiming to be ending them. It's both parties are taking the same stance, and it falls to all of us to stop it. Good luck, everybody, but got to keep trying.
In order to get funding to solve violent crimes, the resources apparently of various police departments aren't there to to get the evidence taken care of, to get the DNA's sampling done, all the lab work for violent crimes of murder and rape.
The drug crimes are more important and more lucrative for the police department.
More lucrative because the money's being it's out there from the federal government, and it's a lure.
Well, foreclosure money.
The foreclosure money? I'm not.
Well, in other words, not foreclosure money. I'm trying to remember the term when you sequester property or assets from people who are connected with drug cases prior in a civil proceeding. Forfeiture. I'm not thinking of foreclosure. It's another F word.
Oh.
Sorry.
Do they make much money on that? They don't they auction off assets, things like that?
You know, it's a good question. It's been my perhaps naive impression that police departments get a lot of funding for civil forfeiture, but maybe that goes into a broader fund. And a real good question locally would be what kind of forfeiture has happened here in Santa Cruz County. We've been talking with
Maureen Smith.
And listening nearby,
Paul Gershowitz.
Any comments, Paul, about the forthcoming lack of revolution?
Well, only briefly, I began to think that maybe the solution is evaporation. In other words, when the police authorities are coming to get you and you're sleeping, press a button, whoops, and you evaporate.
I think that's the usual procedure that's being used here. We've been talking with
Paul Gershowitz.
Thanks, Paul. So I'm outside now, and it's around 9 o'clock. There are two groups of folks here, one around the table, which has signs, sleep is not a crime, the right to sleep somewhere in Santa Cruz, no sleep, no justice, and coffee and cappuccino are being provided. Looks like we have about 10 people here. And then over by the famous bench where Gary was arrested last winter on four successive evenings for sleeping, with a sign, sleep is not a crime, or legacy of cruelty, and cited PC 647E and 6.36010. The statutes in Santa Cruz are being used in Santa Cruz to criminalize homeless people at night. And there's a group of about 10 people here gathered around this kind of quadrilateral bench here, which is circled around a tree. Any thoughts about this for Free Radio?
Well, I'm against it, I guess. not really, I don't guess.
What's your name?
My name is Carmen.
And how did you hear about this case?
Well, Free and Gary stay with me.
So you provide a temporary refuge from either jail or the police station?
Essentially, yes. Yeah. Yeah. Gary stays with me when he's not otherwise at other places.
Out there being a criminal on the outside, the judge saved him from that by, of course, sending him to jail today at 3 o'clock.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's all...
For those who just tuned in, that means that since it's illegal for Gary to sleep after 11, the judge made sure that he would have a nice jail to sleep in.
It's all just oppression. That's the way I see it. I mean, we're losing our rights.
Please, justice, justice. Try to use the proper terminology. Someone doesn't know the right words.
So. No, I don't.
For your constitutional authority, what's your take on this?
It's unconstitutional.
In a word. You've been
calling... right to sleep, you know. It's a fundamental right to be involuntarily unconscious. You know, you have no choice in the matter, so how can they make it a crime?
Santa Cruz is a very special community. We do things differently here.
Gentrified.
Not so special after all.
Yeah, it's just like everywhere else. It would destroy our whole, the sanctity of private property. Thou must worship thy land.
But this is public property, though, that Gary was arrested on, that we're standing on. And it was
the sanctity of the bureaucrats' prerogative to their control.
Someone must make the rules, Free. Are you suggesting we have anarchy?
That's a bad way to make rules, too.
There's always a dissenter in every group, including, apparently, the anarchist group. Here we have, it looks like about 25 people have finally gathered.
I'm sleeping. Is Ma going to go home?
Can you call Jay today?
Why is that?
Yes. I will.
Any comments on this case?
Can you tell him that?
No. And you're new to this. You just kind of walked in. What's your impression of all this?
I don't know. I was just wondering what was going on, so I stopped by. I don't quite understand half the stuff people are telling me. They're sharing information. I'm not quite sure I understand what's going on.
This guy's gone to jail at 3 o'clock today, serving a sentence of 6 months for lodging because he was part of a peaceful protest that held signs and slept overnight on these steps about 2.5 years ago. Well, 2 years ago, actually. And then this December, he came back and slept on this bench with a sign, "Sleep is not a crime," in solidarity with homeless people who have no choice but to sleep outside, since there's shelter for less than 5% of the homeless in Santa Cruz. And the judge told him that he would be, if he did it again tonight and slept outside, he would, the entire 2-year sentence would be added to the 4 months or 6 months he has to serve, starting at 3 o'clock.
It's ridiculous.
Like right there, remaining.
Sad where our country's coming to.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you. You work for the county yourself?
No. I went here to look for a help permit for a business, and I saw this, so I was curious.
No. What's your name?
Daniel Geary.
Thanks, Daniel. This will be on free radio probably Sunday morning. I'll give you the card. Reachless, she also is a coming up for trial before the same judge, John Gallagher. I guess you weren't in the courtroom when he did his latest shindig.
No, I wasn't in there. I was out at the...
This is Linda LeMaster, who has a trial coming up in October, which I've talked about a lot on the air, and my apologies for going through it again for those who... But Linda's got some new thoughts, for those who've heard it before. And give her an opportunity to speak.
Roof table.
You've talked about this a lot on the air and endlessly over the years, as have I. Any thoughts today that you think are new and exciting or old and important?
I don't have any new thoughts. My old thoughts are both exciting and important. It's kind of anger that the courts work this way when it's a politicized case. But I don't know enough information to justify how upset I am.
Linda faces 6 months in jail as Geary is serving 6 months in jail for exactly the same, quote, crime called lodging, which is essentially being part of a political protest on the steps of the courthouse overnight.
But being upset might be the point.
Yeah, keep us out of balance so they can get rid of us more easily because we're not taxpayers and we're not afraid.
Here, here. We've been talking with...
Lighthouse, Linda LeMaster.
Thank you. And your case is coming up in court for...
October 15th, and I want to invite everybody who wants to learn something about how this does and doesn't work to come October 15th at 9 in the morning for lodging in California.
Department 2.
Department 2, Gallagher's courtroom.
That's Grim Gavel Gallagher?
Well, I don't want to call him names, but I just told you what I thought of him as a judge. Yeah. He's not compassionate, and he doesn't understand what he's doing to homeless people.
Now, you've been maybe observing or been hearing about the 6 weeks of harassment that homeless people have been suffering, recently documented by video journalist and writer Brent Adams, who's also facing charges, serious charges, of the Santa Cruz 11 circus trial that's coming up in January. What do you think of this 6-week persecution, prosecution, camp clearing that Chief Vogel's goon squads, along with First Alarm Security, Parks and Rec, presumably the deputies are also helping with?
I have two minds. The sheriff's deputies are helping the city cops clean up?
I do not have specific information on that, but I'm suggesting that may be the case.
Parks officers and, police officers,
but not necessarily deputies.
Yeah, I'd read in the paper there were three city departments involved, but that the police chief had declared himself the head of the squad.
More like the asshole of the squad, but it's hard to imagine that there's actually an intelligence behind this other than a sort of a craven political desire to pander to the prejudices of a certain group of people who have a majority on the city council at the moment.
I would say the link between that, the ad hoc city council group to compact or get rid of homeless people, has suggested this as a legitimate course of action to the police and totally spun around 180 degrees the in-house policy of the police to ticket only on complaint by doing this. And in my opinion, the police decision to do this cleanup in the way they are, as ruthlessly as they can, while deliberately smearing homeless people and what people think of them more, is really illegal. It's a criminal that the police department has that much freedom that they can have one policy Monday and a reverse of it Tuesday, and homeless people, people that don't watch TV news every night and keep their liver inflamed through that kind of information exaggeration, are the ones that don't know about it in advance. They did that in order to hurt people, and they're hurting people more than their usual pre-Labor Day cleanup and sale of Santa Cruz by hiding people and scaring them.
There is a huge rise in the number of citations issued. According to the police blog itself, which Brent Adams' article amply documents, and you can go to the police blog, Santa Cruz Police Department blog, and check that out. They're in the sixth week of this cleanup, as I mentioned before. They're also apparently using, in order to avoid the sleeping van law, which seems pretty outrageous to almost anybody who hears about it, except Judge Gallagher, apparently, or the deputies, or others who are following orders, or under some political imperative. They're using the restricted areas, 13.04 code, to give people citations and tickets for being in a restricted area. But, of course, as more and more areas get restricted in Santa Cruz, the levee, the courthouse after dark, City Hall late at night, the library late at night, the levee up and down the levee, the parks, the Poganip, as these areas become increasingly restricted, it becomes easy for the police to selectively decide who they want to ticket. And if it's someone who's sleeping there, they don't have to give them a sleeping ticket, they just give them a forbidden zone ticket.
So restricted zones or forbidden zones are private property. What is left once you take those away? Where can a person just stop, take their shoes off, sit down, and not be a criminal if all these kind of places, the on-ramps at the freeways, the margin parks, the pocket parks like this one in front of the courthouse here, where can you sit down and not be a criminal?
Limited areas along sidewalks are theoretically legal, but of course benches have been pulled out in order not to empower the homeless or enable these kinds of questionable behaviors, like holding a sign that says "We'll work for food" or "Need something to eat." Or
you're saying along the edge of the sidewalks. But I was in court when you were on trial once about whether a group of people was crowding the sidewalk shut, and for once the judge actually wanted the jury and the officials to see what they were talking about, and he actually took the whole courtroom to see the sidewalk and have you guys reenact the crime of being on the sidewalk to see whether or not it was blocking. So I think that's a very lame alternative.
Across from Atlanta's Fantasy World downtown, Judge Kelly did that, I believe, in 1991, 2, or 3 with the case of Wanton Dave Jacobs, who was arrested or cited for sitting on the sidewalk, a side of the sidewalk, across from what was then called the Java House. And when I sat down next to him, they wouldn't arrest me. I mean, I was very deeply offended by that, apparently.
You were offended that they arrested Dave, but they didn't arrest
him?
How come
he had a more ratty bathrobe, I guess, than I did.
Well, you're a known personality. People know you're not homeless. They know you're a local. They're not going to arrest you because they know you might stand up for your rights.
Well,
but they
Jacob
didn't know
stands
David
up.
Yet, and that's how they got him.
They actually probably did know David, but they thought he would eventually buckle under the pressure. He did a vigil at the town clock for many months after the first Iraqi slaughter in the Middle East by the Elder Bush.
He was a hero for homeless people when he lived here, and he only left because his dad was dying and he had to take care of his own father. But he is a real warrior here for a long time, and a lot of people started feeling safe to speak up about their own situation because he was there.
You're talking about
Wanton Dave.
Yes, all the old folks, except for a few of us, seem to have disappeared. But there's a new crop of video journalists and activists who have, they're more supporters today Well, there are about as many as they showed up 20 years ago when we went to court on behalf of Sandra Loringer for feeding the homeless.
Over the years, there have been a lot of struggles like this, a lot of struggles that end up in court, week after week, and nothing be accomplished except diffusing the people, but that sometimes come together like this with everybody looking out for each other over and over for over 30 years. And homeless people are being treated worse. So what can we do with this quantum of people that we're not doing now?
This is an important question. I know that 20 years ago, almost to the month, you had been arrested at the Heiner House, and you were running for city council at the same time.
Yeah.
And you actually got 3.4% of the vote.
Yeah, and if some of my buddies who were also running had not falsely claimed that I was on a slate with them, I'd have been on that city council. But it didn't happen. Dan Gar got a few more votes than I did.
You know what I think of these city council races, but I'm glad that you raised the issues as you have over the last three decades and four decades, actually.
Well, I was talking I ran for city council to try to get the city to see that they weren't creating enough affordable, let alone low-income housing for the people they had here. And I, by that intention of running, I succeeded in a way because they started creating more and getting some done that had been tied up in the court. I forgot the name of it, the little tiny units on Pacific Avenue down by the pizza place.
Pizza My Heart?
Yeah, above there.
Central.
El Centro. Yeah.
I want to hear more about that. You're really the expert on affordable housing, or far more knowledgeable than I am, for sure. But we're going to have to switch to slow speed.
Hi, check in with Gary, too.
Do it. Talk to you. We've been talking with?
Here's White House Linda.
Thank you.
A lodging criminal.
A lodging criminal. Accused lodging criminal.
So we're also here with someone who's doing...
Before we turn to our next speaker, just wanted to make a note. I was looking over the actual ordinance that is being used instead of the sleeping ban, instead of the misdemeanor lodging code to go after people sitting on the sleeping on the levee or in the parks or in the Poganip. And it's called the Access and Use Chapter of the Santa Cruz Municipal Code. And the particular section is hours of operation, which I will get into as soon as I deal with this caller. Hey there, caller. How's it going?
Good, Robert. How's it going?
Oh, this sounds like an old broadcaster from ancient days and a current temporary city employee.
That's right. How you doing?
I'm good.
What are you up to, Robert? I hear listening to your show for once. I haven't been able to get the station in, but I'm downtown today, so I've been listening all morning and riveted to each speaker you have there.
Tidbit of information that comes popping out of the show, yeah. I was about to read the powers that the Parks and Rec Department has to close off, regulate, declare forbidden zones, almost huge amounts of the city, not just that you would normally think, well, they control the parks because they're the parks department, but I was going to mention that section 13.04.011 of the municipal code, which is called hours of operation, states, for the purpose of this chapter, the areas under the jurisdiction and control of the Parks and Recreation Director encompasses without limitation all city parks and green belts, all city park trails and roads, all city park facilities and buildings, including Lighthouse Field, State Beach, De La Vega Golf Course, Main Beach, Cowles Beach, Steamer Lane, Harvey West Pool, Beach Flats Community Center, Loudoun Nelson Community Center, you should be familiar with that, the Teen Center, the Civic Auditorium, City Hall Courtyard, Mission Plaza, the Town Clock, the Natural History Museum, the Surfing Museum, Santa Cruz Municipal Wharf, Pacific Avenue, that's all up and down Pacific Avenue.
Yeah.
West Cliff Beach, Pelton Street to Swanton Boulevard, San Lorenzo Levee and Bike Path, San Lorenzo Benchlands, Inner Banks, the San Lorenzo River within the city limits, the Brancy Forty and Carbonera Creeks within the city limits, Jesse Street Marsh, plus any other facilities or areas assigned to the Parks and Recreation Department by the city manager. So anywhere that the city manager wants to declare an area off limits, he just gives it over to Danette Shoemaker, who heads the Parks and Rec, and she can, by regulation, establish hours during which any part of the facility may be open to the general public. No one shall enter or remain in any of those facilities or areas during those hours. When they're closed, if you're in violation, it's punishable. It's an infraction. And I guess second violation is probably a misdemeanor. And
like parks after dark kind of thing.
Like parks after dark, like the library after 9:30, I think it is. The city hall after 10 or 10:30,
mm-hmm.
all that. So the latest curfews that have been set up all over. And I guess
right.
Loudon Nelson doesn't... Loudon Nelson Park has a curfew, so that's...
Yeah, dusk to dawn or whatever.
Uh-huh.
The same as the levee.
Right. And
it also used to be one of the only parks you could smoke in, but it is no longer. That was recent.
Interesting. When did they change that?
Probably within about a year ago or so. There's those, I don't know if you notice, I forget what they're called. There's these butt cans they have now. They have locks on them so people can't get in there and steal butts or whatever. And they're at the edge of the park, so... It's kind of funny because we have a lot of AA programs and NA, Narcotics Anonymous, and Alcoholics Anonymous, and they all smoke like, you know, smokestacks, you know, so they have to go all the way to the edge of the park to smoke now. They can't smoke in the park, which, you know, I mean, and smoking is a pretty bad habit, but...
It should be up to you. If you want to smoke, it's your life, it's your lungs. And all this crap about secondhand smoke outside, you know,
right.
always has me wondering. I mean, I think that, you know, in certain areas where children are playing, you know, okay.
Yeah.
You know,
what if you're a medical marijuana patient and you need to use your medicine?
Of course, you have the additional burden there. If you're a medical marijuana patient, you're not supposed to be within 1,000 feet of any facility that involves, I guess, not just children, it's other kinds of things. So it's
no, I mean a patient, not a club. I mean, like no. a person that needs to use their
I know,
their medicine.
I know. But if you have to smoke to do it, while San Francisco has an exemption for medical marijuana smokers, Santa Cruz does not.
Oh, really? I did not know that.
Now, I don't know what the police department policy is in enforcing, except that Craig Canada, who is a regular medical marijuana smoker, used to be regularly harassed by the police for smoking. He had a show where he talked about the details of this and more,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's no longer on the air. And he ran for city council at one point, and he was homeless. So that might have been one of the issues.
Yeah, it's mainly like on a complaint. If someone complains about it, then the cops come, then they'll... do something, but other than that, they're not going to go looking for that, although they do use first alarm, which I call false alarm. In a lot of these areas you're talking about, patrolling like the levees, even the park at Loudon Nelson at certain times, and they'll go up to you if you're smoking a cigarette or what have you and get and tell you that you can't do all that. The Santa Cruz police really doesn't do that. They all are complaint-driven on things
well,
like
that. Well,
that's
interesting. It's interesting you say that. I don't know that really is true. That was the constant thing Rotkin used to tell me about sleeping band tickets. Oh, it's all
well, I mean, yeah, if they're walking downtown and they see you smoking, they'll tell you to stop and give you a ticket or whatever. But I'm just talking about the park out here. They don't normally...
I see.
Patrol it, like walk through it. They'll drive by, but they normally don't walk. Occasionally, there's been a few times where they've...
You're talking about Loudon Nelson Park.
Yeah, Loudon Nelson Park.
Right.
There's
yeah.
been a couple of times they've decided to acquire one of our rooms here and spy on people in the park. And there was talk about putting cameras up, but I think the city council people shot all that down. They don't want cameras up everywhere.
Well, there's a new city council. Maybe we'll have a new surveillance system going.
Well, you always got Google Maps, so that shows everything. I don't know if you look at your,
tell me,
to look
tell
at
me
your
about
neighborhood.
Tell us about that for those who are not too
oh,
savvy.
Well, you know, Google Maps snaps a picture of your whole neighborhood, and pretty much anything. You could, like, take a drive down Soquel Avenue on Google Maps, and although people's faces are blurred, you can see people's, you know, their houses. You could see above their house. You could see into their backyard. You could see, you know, maybe they're growing medical marijuana plants. You could see that. A lot of different things. And I heard you talking about that earlier about the rise in busts.
Yeah.
And I kind of did a little bit of research that, and I noticed none of them were done within the city of Santa Cruz limits because there's, each county has their own, like how many plants you can grow per square inch. But for, pretty much it's a free-for-all. Nobody really knows. In Santa Cruz, the only limitations are for clubs, but not for people growing. So there is actually no limitation. If you happen to be growing your own and have a note from a doctor, not necessarily a card from a club that you have to pay $100 for, if you have a note from the doctor, which you can find on the internet, and have someone fill it out and have your doctor fill it out and discuss with you what's going on, and you tell him, and you post that in your garden, then that's well than enough to cover you under the law. Unless the feds bust in, that's a whole different story.
If you can find a doctor, A, who will do it, one, and B, if you have enough money to go to a doctor to pay for the doctor's appointment. I mean, those are two considerations. I know
Planned Parenthood does it.
well, good for them. I'm glad to hear that, and that's interesting. Yeah. And so that's useful information.
Well, it depends on the doctor you talk to, I guess, but
This is ridiculous. You have to do this kind of shit to smoke a recreational drug that's far less potent than dangerous than alcohol. You know,
to grow a plant that gives more oxygen. It gives oxygen to the earth, too, is another, just the plant itself.
Even though what you're saying is okay to grow your own, you know, people who can't, you know, haven't got the skills to do that, or you want to have, who need a higher potency level, you know, Ken Sampson's club just closed down. Greenway is the monopoly club in town. No other clubs are allowed in Santa Cruz.
Look at their prices. They're more than street value, way more than street value.
You know, I may be trying to get some marijuana therapy myself for inflammation inside that I've got. And there was an article, I think, in the Santa Cruz Weekly that talked about not just THC being an anti-inflammatory, one of the ingredients of marijuana, but also CND, which is another ingredient of marijuana being particularly effective, although it does lack the euphoric effects of marijuana, which might be a downer or might be an upper if you have to do some work or study or you don't want to get euphoric particularly, you know.
Yeah, you just end up hungry usually.
Hey, munch, man. Good appetite.
But
for
I thought I'd call in and chime in. You're talking about the rise in the homeless population. I noticed in place of employment at Loudoun Nelson, we have a senior lunch program. I think it's like $2 per lunch or donation. I'm not sure how exactly the way it works, but it's had a definite rise in numbers, and been noticing a lot more homeless seniors nowadays showing up to the program. They went from, I think, maybe like 30 to 40 people to 80, and 80 plus people are now using the Meals on Wheels free lunch program at Loudoun. It's Monday through Friday, and I believe there's a number you got to call in to make an appointment, or you can come in and talk to Amy about it.
So it's not a drop-in lunch like, let's see, the religious meals are, that one of them, which is happening at the Air at Circle Church, actually even as we speak, out on the west side, and one of them, which is happening at the Homeless Lack of Services Center.
Yeah, it's run by Meals on Wheels, and they need to know how many it is so they can make enough food for it, is how it is. None of the food is prepared at Loudoun Nelson. It's brought in from Meals on Wheels, and then they just serve it as all they do. All volunteers, too, are serving, so there's a lot of people volunteer. If people want to get involved, they should come down and talk to Amy during the week, Monday through Friday. I'd say, like, after 11, because they always could use volunteers for that program.
Yeah, well, I guess I'll get my elderly ass down there at least to eat, if not to volunteer.
Yeah.
You never can tell.
Well, the food isn't too bad, you know. Some of them are kind of weird, but, I mean, it's all good, healthy food, and it's a place where the seniors can get together. And plus, all the other senior programs that are happening at Loudoun Nelson are really good. There's dance programs, there's yoga, and all these are donations, too. There's a great computer program. You can learn about computers. Seniors can learn about Facebook. They can learn, you know, Kim runs the senior programs at Loudoun Nelson, and she does an excellent job there, and they always help people. A lot of homeless people are there. There's a senior lounge that seniors can go in there and use computers or use their own computer in there, since there's free Wi-Fi at Loudoun Nelson. And the teen center, all the teens are at Loudoun Nelson now as well. They have something to do there. The teen center is recently not funded at all, and I guess they just started getting funding again. And they've been able to survive by moving into Loudoun Nelson. I guess they were over by, what is it, were, I guess it's that.
They were in the old Kinko's building.
Right? Yeah, the Walgreens is now.
Yeah.
They were in one of the small suites there, but they couldn't afford that anymore, and they almost cut the whole entire program, but people donated and wanted to keep it going, and it's a great place for teens to get together and at least have stuff to do. You know, they go to the farmer's market, and they teach them things. They go play in a park and what have you. There's tons of stuff to do in the center as well. They a lot of them, there's like music in there. They can learn how to DJ. There's computers, arts and crafts. So there's lots of stuff for the teenagers to do. I believe you got to be 13 to start there. 13 to, I guess, 18. I'm not sure for sure.
A lot of homeless teens showing up?
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, it's kind of hard to tell all the time. There's also the County Office of Education runs the Alternative Schools Program, which is just one of the sites. There's sites all over the county, and they're an excellent program if you have a kid that's in normal school. Like my son was in Harbor High, and he kept getting into trouble, and he had all these problems at school. He was getting Fs and Ds, and this is just smaller class sizes. They hold them all over the county. And they focus more on individual students, like all schools really should be doing. And they have lots of really good programs. Now he's making A's and B's, you know. So it's I went to a meeting at the County Office of Education. I think it was beginning of the summer, and just for concerned parents, because they wanted to know, get some feedback, and the entire room was completely packed of people. There must have been maybe 200, 300 people just jammed in the room. Some people had to be turned away that were in full support of this program, because more and more students are, you know, the schools are just, or shit, you know. The hardest part of school for me was being in the hallway, and when you're in a hallway at Loudoun Nelson, you're dealing, you know, you have seniors everywhere, you have all sorts of different things going on at once, and it's different, you know. It's a different atmosphere for them, and they can learn a lot better that way.
There were threats to shut down Loudoun Nelson a year or two ago. Are those...
They were just thoughts and threats, but they're realizing now that, you know, with the Vets Hall closing down, I don't know how long ago, a couple years ago, a lot of people started utilizing Loudoun Nelson a hell of a lot more now. There's all these plays these kids put on, you know, just a different plays, you know, little toddler plays to, like, teenagers that put on different productions of theater on Broadway.
Yeah, some of them are pretty good, too.
Yeah, some of them pretty good. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on at the center. People should get involved in it and check it out.
Is there much mixing between seniors, teens, homeless, AA, NA, QED, people?
Sometimes. You know, the one memory that gets me is there are these, like, two tough-looking kids. That, you know, you could even think they might be gangbanger-type kids. They're coming in being all cool. And then one of the seniors says, "Young man, can you carry my bag for me?" And so he, like, all of a sudden he just, like, turned into this nicest person in the world, picked up the bag for her and walked it down the hall for her. And there is in and out. They see the seniors. And I think that's really important for young people to see that, and not just, you know, because the schools are just, they're horrible, you know. Everybody hated school. I hated school with a passion. I hated being in the hallways and being judged by my peers or what have you, and all this other bullshit that happened in the halls. And here, you know, it's a safe place for people to come in, and anybody can come and use the bathrooms and stuff, but people need to also respect the space. They can't come in drunk and that kind of thing, so we make sure it's a safe place for pretty much everybody.
How are the wages treating the workers there? You've been employed there for, what, now 6 years or something?
Yeah, it could be better. They could be, they're just now, the city, because it's part of Parks and Rec, and they're low on the totem pole. They're not like the police department, and they get pretty much whatever they want, fire department. But people should realize that the parks are just as important. You know, otherwise you wouldn't have parks. You'd have overgrown places and probably a lot of bad things happening there. But it's starting. I see a few things getting better. They did hire a full-time person at the Civic Auditorium. And the Civic, it hasn't been a good time for them, although they're just now starting to get a few things going there. I worked there for a little while as well. But, you know, I'm hanging on because hoping I'll get a full-time position there. But mostly there's temps that pretty much are running the city, I'd say.
What's the wage of the average for temps?
I think they start off around 10-something. It's around $10 an hour. That's what I started off at. That was about 7 years ago.
Has it increased since then?
I can't hear you. You cut out.
Has it increased since then?
Oh, yes, it has.
And what about benefits? You guys got benefits?
No benefits for temps.
Oh, boy.
We're the SEIU is our union, and I forget what propositions they wanted us to vote against. I should get all my shit together on that. But there was a couple of times the city wanted to privatize our Social Security, which is totally illegal by law. They brought in some guy from Texas to kind of change everything. They wanted us to pay into some private plan or some sort, and the SEIU went to bat for us. One of the few times they ever did, and told them they couldn't do that. And so they're trying different things. They want to try to take even more money away from the temp workers who are hoping to get full-time positions with the city. But then again, you get all eaten up by the health costs, you know, for the insurance.
Yeah,
so
sure.
You got to weigh what's more important. So,
as a worker who's been working at this job for I don't know how many years, what changes need to happen for there to be some real progress here?
Well, I only work in the parks area, and it's in one facility, so I don't know what all needs to happen, but they need to open up more positions because there's a lot of things that the parks need, you know. They need more people to, like Loudon Nelson, we need to have, like, a full-time person here to be able to fix things because, again, it's being used more and more and more than ever. And that's what I do. I'm building maintenance, but I'm only, like, 20 hours a week. I should be 30 to 40 hours a week. There used to be two. There was a full-time janitor and a full-time building maintenance person. Both those positions are gone, although I'm backfilling the building maintenance position right now, but I'm not a full city, you know, employee with benefits and all that stuff.
Do you want to identify who you are for your corporate masters?
Skidmark Bob.
You are the Skidmark Bob. You have your own podcast, yes?
Yeah, I still continue to podcast, and I believe it's still being played on free radio, although I can't pick up free radio most of the time unless I'm downtown.
Wow. Let me look at the schedule here. I think you
it's supposed
are...
supposed to be Tuesdays at 2 is the last I heard.
Pop Defect Radio, played. 2 to 3, yeah. That's
there it is. Check
on
out
Tuesdays.
My... Yeah, check out my blog. It's not really like a blog, like I write in it every day. I just post the shows I make, and I make about probably one a month. Latest one's about police abuse, so it's clips from different protests and different police abuse, like the, I forget the guy's name, then Fullerton that was beat to death by the police.
I remember that. Yeah, I don't remember his name either, but I do remember the stories in the paper.
Trayvon Martin covered his case.
It's in Florida.
It's just clips and songs, mostly songs about the police, because it's endless songs, you know, against the police that are out there, mostly punk rock songs and hard rock songs. But it's kind of amazing. You look at stuff with different... different things people write songs about, and there's quite a few songs about how bad the police are, and I wonder why.
Well, what about our own Deputy Chief Clark? Have you written a song yourself about Steve and his adventures?
My adventures with Steve Clark?
Adventures with Clark, yeah.
What is he now? Is he Chief or Deputy Chief?
No, he's Deputy Chief. Actually, I got a long discussion of his behavior from Steve Was it Steve? It wasn't from Steve Snare, although Steve, I think, has had his own opinions about he's with People Power. One of the homeless folks I talked to mentioned how Clark, this was in the last week, pulled up on him. He and his wife were walking all, were downtown near Starbucks, and he had leaned his property or his bag against a, I don't know, it was a parking meter or a building, and Clark came up, you can't do that, you have to move that right now, and some such thing.
Wow.
Lowell, the chief police, was with him, and and the woman was angry, and she kind of threw her bag at Clark. And then gave him a piece of her mind. Apparently, angry homeless people are getting angrier and angrier about these sweeps, these campground sweeps that are happening.
Right.
There's a second incident that happened. Clark, of course, is famous for earlier activity where he was. I used to write about him 25 years ago when he was a beat cop. He used to kick homeless people in the feet as they were sitting, you know, down to get them to stand up. He reportedly drew his gun on a skateboarder in front of the old bookshop Santa Cruz, said, down on your knees and say your prayers.
Skateboards can be dangerous.
I guess so.
I'm more familiar with his undercover antics with the neighborhood enforcement team, better known as the NET team.
And that's more recently or some time ago?
That was in the 90s, early 90s, I think it was. I was doing quite a bit of cop watch back then, and that's when I was homeless as well, and I was out recording police. I kind of got inspired by you and your tape recorder.
Hey.
So I'd go out and record incidents with the police, different things, uniform police, and then also discovered a police scanner, which are totally legal. People can buy and find out the frequencies. They're online, find out the Santa Cruz frequencies. And one of the ones I came across was their undercover, some of their undercover, just by scanning. Being able to pick them up, talking to each other, and it's totally legal to listen to. The only thing you can't do is commit a crime while using the scanner. That's a misdemeanor, I believe. I used to listen quite frequently to their. They'd go and bust kids down on the mall back when, before there was the Taqueria Vallarta, and that was a UCSC extension.
Mm-hmm.
Used to be Ford's. Parking. It used to be Ford's
department store, and then it became
department
a parking
store
lot
that fell in the earthquake.
Yeah,
and then it was an open lot, and then it was an excellent place for the farmers market for a while. I thought that would have been the best place for farmers market just to be, but they had to build it all up again. And the Funat Bombs used to serve there too back in the day.
You were with Funat Bombs yourself, right?
I was. Food Not Cops at the time, I guess.
Indeed. I mean, actually, that was a very active organization. You, Tony Mello, Kim Argula, others were really not just serving food, but serving a different perspective.
Serving revolution soup.
Revolutionary soup, yes. Keith McHenry's old days, too. He was, of course, co-founder.
Yeah, we would go to San Francisco and watch them be brutally arrested at City Hall time and time again, at lunch, at dinner. They served, what, three times a day, I think,
or at least twice.
And they would be arrested. They would have undercover police follow them with their soup buckets, and they'd send a different car with buckets full of water one way, and the cops would pull them over, and it was just insane. Some of the shit that the money they spent on Funat Bombs, as well as here too. But as back to Clark again, he used to do the neighborhood enforcement team, which was mainly the drug squad. They'd bust kids for selling $20 worth of weed or something like that downtown or what have you. There was a couple of times they had. People wearing wires walking around asking for this or that, and then they'd swoop in and bust them for possession or what have you. One political protest, the affirmative action, all around the affirmative action, I don't know what year, that was in the 90s. There was protests, there were students that were from UCSC, huge bunch of students would march downtown, and I got involved in that as well, and I was marching in the march, and I noticed this short guy with this kind of a weird bulge coming out of his hip, wearing a tie-dye T-shirt and his 209 you know, duct taped to him, carrying a candle and singing Kumbaya, and well, boy, it was Officer Clark.
Mm-hmm.
And I was surprised to see him there. And not only he was there, but there were two other police officers, Haley and I forget this other officer. I don't think they're around anymore. But they were following closely behind. And I guess word got around that he was in the crowd, and then they left. And I went up to him and asked him, I didn't know you were, you know, so deeply involved in the protest movement. And he told me, you know, if you fuck with me, I'll kick your ass. Or what did he say? If you fuck with me, I'll break your head or something, I'll kick your ass. And forever, he's always been known to me as the ass-kicking Clark.
Yeah, I mean, that is, he actually, according to Ricardo Lopez, who I interviewed in the interview I played on the last show, Clark came up to him and told him, as he was on the side, near Starbucks in this situation, that he had to move his property. And Clark was not in uniform, so he didn't know he was an official. And then Clark pulls out a badge, and apparently, I don't know how true Ricardo's story is, but Ricardo said, I told him essentially to fuck off. You want to give me a ticket? Give me a ticket. That's fine. And he said, I'll give you a ticket. I'll take you to jail. I said, good. You take me to take an old 60-year-old man to jail. Thank you very much. You can do that. I'm sure you'll be right. And he went on like this. And said, I don't have to take you to jail. I'll beat your ass. Okay. Well, then, you're going to beat up a 60-year-old. This apparently happened in the last week. So the thing about, again, I don't know. I haven't talked to Deputy Chief Clark about this. I doubt he would talk to me about it. But I did see there is video of him taunting Occupy Santa Cruz people in February or March when we did a protest at the Wells Fargo Bank across from the famous 75 River Street at the actually open Wells Fargo Bank. And Clark he brought a whole bunch of officers down to stand like they were guarding the 75 River Street property. Behind the barbed wire fence or whatever, actually it was, and he and Brent Adams had this exchange where, you know, I mean, what impressed me was how volatile and sort of almost out of control Clark was verbally, and how he liked to taunt and provoke activists. And you know, that's, to me, that's the sign of a bully, someone who hides behind a badge and a gun and then uses his position to not just annoy, but encourage other people to say and do things that might be illegal or might regret later because he's got a whole bunch of cops standing nearby. I mean, you know, his defenders would probably say, well, you know, he's a police officer, he has a right to free speech, perhaps a point of view we don't agree with, you know, he has a right to say what he does. I think Clark does have a right to say whatever he wants, but it's true when people in high positions in the police department express, you know, a kind of bigotry he does, which you often see in his press releases, too, it's disconcerting, to say the least.
Huh, interesting. Yeah, I don't know. He's always not liked me.
But he's welcome to come on the show, and if he wants to defend what he does, Steve, you know, come in. I don't know. Of course, the Free Radio Collector probably throw me out for having a cop in the studio, but, you know, I joined Becky Johnson.
Just
in
don't
exile.
Bring the FCC. You'll be fine.
Oh, well, then, they're probably here already. You know? Who knows? Anyway.
Well, there was one time I remember the police came to the studio, and it wasn't long after. I think you were there too. It was a long, long story, long sorted affair. We've had lots of stuff going on. And I remember the police used to listen to us all the time. Maybe they still do some of them, but they'd listen just to hear their, you know, their name being heard said on your show.
Everybody likes to have their name in the media, some people don't actually, but you know, many of us do. And I know
we know you do.
They call me a media hound. Woof, woof. And we've been talking with Skidmark Bob, former broadcaster. You can find his podcast at
popdefectradio.blogspot.com. It's free to download, free to stream. There's a bunch of different shows there, mostly music shows. There's some, you know, themed shows, political themed shows as well. And I think I'm working on one about the end of the world coming up here pretty soon.
Oh, yeah, the end of the world. Yeah, and that's every Tuesday from 2 to 3 on Free Radio. You can listen to Pop Defect Radio from Skidmark. And you'll also hear him occasionally on my show when he calls in.
When I call in.
Hey, thank
All
you.
All right, thanks for the good show, Robert.
Hey, thanks for calling in.
All right, talk to you later.
All righty, man. Bye-bye. And now, again, phone lines are open. If you have any thoughts, Steve Clark, if you're listening, call in if you'd like, Deputy Chief, or any of his friends or supporters. You know, maybe Steve has been doing some good things lately that I haven't heard about. It would be a breath of fresh air if that were the case, and I'd like that to be the case. I think I've got some more tape to play. I also have a few. I'm going to insist on doing a little newspaper article reading because I always save these damn things and they pile up and I never read them. Here's a note: Judge strikes down Nevada's none of the above law, a quirky Nevada law the Republicans feared could siphon votes from a disgruntled electorate and sway the outcome of close presidential and U.S. Senate races. And the state was struck down Wednesday, about a week ago, by a federal judge. The U.S. District Judge Robert Jones said the state's decades-old ballot alternative of none of the above was unconstitutional because votes for none don't count in the final tallies that determine winners. So he's preventing voters from expressing their disgust with the existing system through a technicality. Sorry to hear it there, Judge. Secretary of State Ross Miller said the office would pursue an immediate and expedited appeal to protect the longstanding public interest of the none-of-the-above options. And I'm kind of curious. I haven't researched it, but I wonder how many do none-of-the-above, and is that a growing thing, as I would kind of hope it was. There's been a controversy recently about whether Richard Oki, A-O-I-K-I, who was a former Black Panther, was actually an informant for the FBI. And I've been doing some reading on that, but I have no new information about that at the moment. I suppose it's good news from Japan when the premier agrees for the first time since anti-nuclear rallies began months ago. The prime minister agrees, Yoshihiko Noda. He allowed a dozen protesters inside his office for a half-hour meeting at a time of growing anti-nuclear sentiment in Japan. He angered demonstrators by dismissing their weekly rallies as, quote, loud noise, and he was under public pressure to meet them face-to-face. We'll see if Don Lane will meet me face-to-face. He's the mayor. And Sandy Lee of the Community TV has stated she's up for another show involving a follow-up or lack of follow-up by Don Lane on concerns about the abuses against disabled people at the Homeless Lack of Services Center, where Don is both on the board of directors and he's a mayor who votes on appropriations for the Homeless Lack of Services Center. Meanwhile, back in Japan, these demonstrators, who at least they get to chat with the prime minister, big deal, but I guess it's a little deal, they were calling for a shutdown of the reactors at the Oi nuclear power plant in western Japan, which is the first reactor to be restarted since the nuclear accident at Fukushima in March of last year, and want Japan to decommission its 54 other reactors. They say the reactors are not safe to restart, given the country's frequent earthquakes and the government's failure to prevent the Fukushima disaster, not to mention, I would add, their willingness to distort information and to essentially cover up problems that arose after that. The rallies outside Noda's office in Tokyo have grown from several hundreds to tens of thousands. Gosh, it's strange we don't hear about this much over here. Since the prime minister gave the go-ahead for restarting the Oi reactor in July. The meeting Wednesday was broadcast on a live video link from the prime minister's office. Anger is erupting against your administration for failing to heed the lessons of the Fukushima disaster and pushing ahead with the restarts. The leader of the movement, an illustrator who goes by the name of Misao Redwolf, told Noda, "This is not a loud noise. This is the voice of the people." Noda said the government would take a wide range of opinions into account before drafting future energy policy. A committee of experts is debating various scenarios from phasing out nuclear power entirely to keeping enough reactors running to provide 20 to 25% of Japan's power needs. Before Fukushima, nuclear energy supplied about 30% of Japan's electricity. Noda defended his decision to allow the Oi reactor to restart, the Oi reactors to restart, but said Japan intended to downsize its civilian nuclear program. There was no bow and no smile, protesters noted afterward. Public opinion polls have found growing support for phasing out nuclear power. A government poll of about 7,000 people, the results of which were released last a week ago Wednesday, found that a record 46.7% of the respondents supported eliminating nuclear power as an electricity source. An additional 15.4% thought it should be account for just 15% of Japan's power needs. And our old friend PG&E up north, according to the front page of Saturday Chronicle a week ago, says PG&E made meaningless pledges following the San Bruno pipeline disaster while doing nothing to change its corporate emphasis on profit over ensuring the safety of its natural gas system. A top California utility safety official alleges in an extraordinarily harsh regulatory filing. Jingles and slogans aside, PG&E company has not changed its focus from serving the board to serving its customers, captive ratepayers, and people of California, safety program manager Rafi Stepanian wrote in urging the State Public Utilities Commission to impose sanctions against the company in connection with the San Bruno explosion. PG&E company has not delivered real corporate culture change. The company has said it expected to be fined a total of more than $200 million for several regulatory violations stemming from the September 2010 blast, which killed 8 people and destroyed 38 homes. Meanwhile, it began a $10 million advertising campaign last month that features CEO Tony Early, who joined PG&E after the pipeline explosion, acknowledging the company had lost its way before the disaster and promised to improve safety. At the time of the blast, Stepanian managed the commission's utility safety branch, so he's been upgraded to be CEO. Thank you so much. The 23-year agency veteran oversaw the state's San Bruno investigation and wrote the commission report that said PG&E had committed a string of state and federal safety violations. I'm sorry, Stepanian is the guy who's actually writing the critical report of PG&E. Early was not the safety utility person. The safety utility person is actually saying PG&E sucks here. His critique filed this week amounts to the Utility Commission's official rebuttal of PG&E's denial of allegations that have violated safety laws and regulations. In its filing, PG&E took regulators to task for finding fault with its practices when pre-explosion state audits found no violations. And I haven't really followed really carefully this, but you can probably tell that I'm cranky about PG&E. Then there's an interesting free speech issue, which, as a great free speech First Amendment advocate and also a person who has utter contempt and hostility towards cigarette companies, there is a defining in Richmond in a 2-1 decision. Richmond, Virginia court, federal government court, found that the federal government can't require tobacco companies to put large graphic health warnings on cigarette packages to show that smoking can disfigure and even kill people. In the 2-1 decision, the Court of Appeals Court in Washington affirmed a lower court ruling that the requirement ran afoul of the First Amendment's free speech protections. The appeal court tossed out the requirement and told the Food and Drug Administration to go back to the drawing board. It's a blow to the Obama administration's major public health initiatives and raises the prospect of another U.S. Supreme Court tobacco battle. Some of the nation's largest tobacco companies, including R.J. Reynolds, sued to block the mandate to include warnings to show the dangers of smoking and encouraging smokers to quit lighting up, arguing that the proposed warnings went beyond factual information into anti-smoking advocacy. The government argued that the photos of dead and diseased smokers are factual in conveying the dangers of tobacco, which are responsible for about 443,000 deaths in the U.S. each year. The 9 graphic warnings proposed by the FDA include color images of a man exhaling cigarette smoke through a tracheotomy hole in his throat, and a plume of cigarette smoke enveloping an infant receiving a mother's kiss. These are accompanied by language that says smoking causes cancer and can harm fetuses. And Floyd Abrams, an attorney representing Lorillard Tobacco, said there's never been any doubt the government could require warnings on products that can have dangerous results. It's a little equivocal that do have dangerous results. And what the court is saying is that that there are real limits on the ability of the government to require the manufacturer of a lawful product to denounce the product in the course of trying to sell it. You know, it's an interesting question. I mean, the sellers of poisons in pharmacies, would they object if people put a picture of an example of a person who's poisoned on the label and what it would look like and warning, be careful, this can happen to you if you give it to the wrong people, if you use it inappropriately. But it's also, the additional consideration is that cigarettes are addictive. And so this is a way of, I guess, trying to encourage people to fight their smoking addiction. And again, I know really not a lot about ways of fighting addiction, since I haven't been addicted to anything except for chocolate, sugar, television, sexual activity of certain kinds. We won't get into that. Here's a San Mateo County DA clears officer in killing of the boy 15. San Mateo County District Attorney's Office on Wednesday of this week determined a South San Francisco police officer was justified in using lethal force when he shot a 15-year-old boy who allegedly pulled a gun during a struggle. Calling the case tragic, DA Steve Wagstaff said Officer Joshua Cabillo acted appropriately because he believed that Derek Gaines of San Bruno, the dead kid, was reaching for a gun as the two struggled during the June 5th incident. Confronted by a subject who had been armed and who was about to be armed again, public safety required Officer Cabillo to use deadly force to protect himself and others in the immediate vicinity, Wagstaff said in a letter to South San Francisco Police Chief Michael Massoni. While Gaines' gun was not operable due to the lack of a firing pin, Wagstaff noted the officer could not have known that. Prosecutor's office relied on the testimony of a witness who had been pumping gas at the Arco station at Gellert and Westboro Boulevards in South San Francisco. It was there that the officer spotted Gaines and a companion acting suspiciously about 9 p.m. The witness, according to the account, said he could see a gun in Gaines' waistband and he didn't think Cabillo could see the weapon from his position. When Cabillo asked the pair to sit down, Gaines fled. Cabillo caught up with the Gaines and knocked him to the ground. A pistol dropped to the ground and Gaines appeared to reach for the weapon. Why do I find myself feeling suspicious about all this? Suspicious about this official cover story. Cabillo shot him in the neck. Gaines, who was found to be carrying cocaine and methamphetamine and had the drugs in his system, later died at the San Francisco General Hospital. Gaines' father, who was also named Derek Gaines, declined to comment. He referred calls to his attorney, John Burris, who did not immediately return a call for comment. Burris is a famous civil rights attorney who defends a lot of people involved in police misconduct lawsuits. You know, the guy was running away, and again, this sounds like more drug war bullshit, and it also sounds like more police overreaching, but I don't know, because I don't have the details, and we don't have the individual to question here. But here's a really famous case that really made me gag when I read about it. I think it was a week ago. And it's interesting to read the headline on two separate days. The first day of the Santa Cruz Sentinel was Saturday, August 25th, and it was a headline story at the Empire State Building shooting. Police kill gunman outside Empire State Building. Shooter killed former co-worker he blamed for costing him his job. And it's an AP story, and it says, Jeffrey Johnson hid behind a car in his business suit and tie behind the Empire State Building, waiting for the man he blamed for costing him his job. He put a gun to the executive's head and fired five times, then walked off with his briefcase into the morning rush of Midtown Manhattan. Minutes later, Johnson was dead in front of the landmark skyscraper, killed by police Friday in a chaotic confrontation that sent bullets ricocheting, wounded nine other people, and left sidewalks near one of the world's best-known landmarks spattered with blood. Police released dramatic surveillance video that showed the confrontation lasted only a few seconds. Johnson was walking rapidly down the street, trailed by two police officers, when he stopped, wheeled around, and pulled out a gun. About a dozen people ran for their lives, including two small children who were just feet away from Johnson. He pointed the gun at the officers, who quickly fired at him, dropped to his knees, and collapsed. Bystanders likely were hit by police officers' stray gunfire, some of it bullets that rebounded off planters in front of the skyscraper and grazed pedestrians. The two officers fired 16 shots. The surveillance video shows Johnson pointing his weapon at the police, but it's likely he did not get a chance to fire. And there's some more accounts. But notice the headline says nothing about cops wounding 9 bystanders. The next day, in a story on page 3, and I think it's the same people writing. I don't know. Let's see. It's one of the reporters is the same. All 9 people wounded during a dramatic confrontation between police and a gunman outside the Empire State Building were struck by bullets fired by the two officers, police said Saturday, citing ballistic evidence. The veteran patrolman who opened fire on the suit-wearing gunman, Jeffrey Johnson, had only an instant to react when he whirled and pointed a .45 caliber pistol as they approached him. Officer Craig Matthews shot 7 times. Officer Robert Sinishtaj fired 9 times. Neither had ever fired their weapons before on a patrol. The volley of gunfire, that's interesting, felled Johnson in just a few seconds, left 9 other people bleeding on the sidewalk. In the initial chaos Friday, it wasn't clear whether Johnson or the officers were responsible, but based on ballistic evidence, it appears that all 9 of the bullets, or the victims, were struck by fragments or by bullets fired by the police, Police Commissioner Raymond Kelly told reporters. He reiterated that the officers appeared to have no choice but to shoot Johnson, whose body had 10 bullet wounds in the chest, arms, and legs. I believe it was handled well, Kelly said. And there's nothing critical about the police in this article at all, unless you go online and look at some of the comments, which I did at the time. The idea of shooting to kill, whenever anyone either draws a weapon or might draw a weapon, is a pretty terrifying thing for me to think about, and also pisses me off. San Diego, deputy fatally shoots inmate at San Diego Hospital September 2nd. This is from the Sentinel. A San Diego County Sheriff's deputy has fatally shot an inmate who charged at him during a hospital exam for wounds he sustained from jail flight. Police Captain Terry McManus said the 45-year-old inmate died by the time he was wheeled to the trauma center. McManus said the inmate was injured in a violent fight that began when he attacked deputies checking on him at the downtown Central Jail. At the hospital, he broke free of restraints and was about to undergo a CT scan. McManus said the inmate was shot after he swung a chain and charged at a deputy. The deputy involved in the jail fight, we don't have his name, and the hospital shooting were treated for minor injuries. Gun versus chain, lethal shot, originally taken to the hospital because of injuries from a deputy in a fight at the jail. Sounds like a lot of... You know, I wonder about whether police are brutalizing people in jail and then murdering them out of jail, where the word is murder perhaps is strong, but it's they're dying nonetheless. Bid to close California corporate tax loophole fails. Sacramento, a bid to close a $1 billion corporate tax loophole in exchange for providing tuition relief for middle-class Californians, failed early Saturday. The bill had previously squeaked through the assembly with a two-thirds vote, but was the Democratic Speaker, John Perez, was unable to persuade enough Republicans to reach that threshold. AB 1500 fell 5 votes short of a supermajority, which it would have eliminated a tax break for out-of-state corporations. It was approved in 2009 to get a handful of Republicans to vote for the state budget that year. Companies operating in multiple states choose the cheaper of 2 formulas for calculating their tax liability in California. They can use an option that considers a combination of sales, property, and payroll, or a formula that considers only sales. Critics say that benefits out-of-state companies at the benefit of those based in California. Perez of L.A. proposed to use the money to reduce tuition by more than half for about 200,000 college students whose family's annual household income exceeds the cap for getting free tuition at California public universities. So lower middle class students. He tried luring Republican support by offering changes that would have ended a new fire protection fee levied on rural residents and adding a tax exemption for tobacco companies. He was still proposing deals to Republicans and moderate Democrats in the final hours of the two-year Sacramento legislative session, including restoring an insurance program for low-income children that was cut in the state's in this year's state budget deal. And there's more to the story. It's always I always find these newspaper stories, however slanted, interesting. They cover areas that I'm unaware of at some level, or at least not at the depth. Forceful arrests inflame sentiment toward LAPD. This is another Sentinel story from yesterday's paper. A spate of incidents in which the LAPD are accused of using excessive force is threatening to unravel the police department's efforts to bolster community relations. All that blood is just getting in the way, I guess. Video in recent weeks has captured officers punching a handcuffed suspect and slamming a restrained woman to the ground. In a third case, a woman stopped breathing in the back of a police car and later died. Maybe she just held her breath in spite. Could that be? The incidents came after a year of reforms by the LAPD to improve its officers' conduct. The efforts undertaken under a federal court order have yielded results. The city's crime rate is the lowest in four decades, and police are getting praise from communities, including minorities and gays, that have historically complained about mistreatment. Not from the homeless community, as far as I know, though. But the recent incidents underscore that for some police officers on the street, the line on acceptable use of force remains blurry. And it takes time to change, says one guy. And it's too early to tell, says another. And we see community groups coming to our meetings, and they appreciate the better communication. In one incident, Alicia Thomas died in a squad car on July 22nd after struggling with officers trying to arrest her on suspicion of child endangerment. She had left her two children at the police station, where they told officers their mother didn't want them and they had not eaten for several days. Gee, I guess it could be that maybe she was too poor to feed them. I'm just guessing, of course. I don't know, but that's a good reason to put her in a police car, and then for some reason she just doesn't get there alive at the end. During the struggle to get Thomas into the police car, a female officer was captured by the car's video camera threatening to kick Thomas in the groin if she did not obey, and then she made good on her threat. A short while later, Thomas stopped breathing. I guess that can happen if you're kicked hard enough. Police Chief Charles Beck has reassigned the five officers involved and ordered an investigation, of course, by people inside the police department. On August 21st, registered nurse Michelle Jordan was pulled over for holding her cell phone while driving. She got out of the car and did not comply with an officer's demand to get back in the vehicle. That's happened to me, too. The 5'4" woman was slammed to the ground by two male officers and handcuffed. While being led to the patrol car, another officer slammed her to the ground again. The incident was captured by a surveillance camera at a nearby restaurant. Otherwise, you would never have heard about it. Around midnight, as I drove back to Scotts Valley, actually to Felton, I was pulled over by an officer Smith, actually a deputy Smith, in Felton. When I got out of the car, which I almost always do when police officers show up, with my hands showing, he demanded I get back inside. I said, I will. I want to get something out of the back of my car. I think it was a tape recorder or something. He then threatened to tase me. He pulled his nightstick, and then he also put his hand on his gun. I got back in the car and filed a complaint against Deputy Smith. Never heard much from his superior. And I ran into him again, I think, years later in court. That was about 4 or 5 years ago that happened. It was really kind of frightening that seems to be the policies that they're doing. So there's more, but at least I got through some of these clippings. I've got clippings coming out the yin-yang here. You're listening to the final moments of Bathrop's Pier's Broadsides. It's a twice-weekly show. I'll be back on Thursday from 6 to 8. I'll be at the Occupy Santa Cruz shindig maybe, if I don't find something better to do, at 2 o'clock at the post office. That's the steps of the main post office. There's going to be a Labor Day festival where I believe there'll be a support bannering for the Santa Cruz 11. I think their actual event, the Labor Day event, may cost $15 to get into, so I'm not quite sure how public it is. I think it's $15 for the meal. And I'm, as usual, I'm finding it hard to get this computer working. Wait, is it coming up? No. Coming up rather slowly. Let's see if there's anything I've forgotten. You know, I would also be talking about stories like the Iraq executes 21 in a single day. That's the government put in by our government over in Iraq. That's the Maliki government. I don't even want to get into that right now. And, you know, I guess that's really about all I've got today. Let's see if we have perhaps a little more audio before I leave so you can hear a few other people's voices.
Some work with the Food Who's He What's This group. Tell us more about that, Roxanne.
You're trying to talk to me about the Food Justice
Coalition? I am indeed. Forgive me for my ignorance and lack of clarity.
Well, we had a great meeting on Tuesday. We've got a new time and place at India Joe's at 5:30. And we are getting mobilized and organized. And we've had really good success with several events February through June. We had at least one event every month. Raised awareness, raised some money. We've got several campaigns, things like turning ornamental parks into edible parks, more neighborhood farmers garden.
Your objective is?
Feed the people. So yeah. Getting people empowered about food and access to food and bringing more food access to the people. We have public lands that we pay for that are maintained with, you know, public dollars. And we could be feeding people on public lands right now. And so I'm very interested. I'll just speak for myself. That's a campaign I'm really interested in. I can see the front of the courthouse covered in olive trees and lemon trees and
sleeping
blueberries.
Homeless people.
Well, and possibly we could have places that probably more comfortable, I think, for sleep.
Under the olive tree, it has a nice idyllic quality.
It certainly does.
Olives on trees or are they in bushes?
They're trees. Yeah.
Here's what I know about food. I eat it, but who knows where it comes from? The supermarket, I understand.
Oh, hopefully not. That's usually the worst place to get your food. Best place out of your own garden. Second best place is from your friend's garden. Third best place, farmer's market or neighborhood market. And then maybe a health food store. Last place would be the supermarket.
What about the 7-Eleven?
And that includes Whole Foods, which I consider a supermarket.
Staff of Life.
Staff of Life is a fantastic local market. Yeah, you know, we've got to be educating people about organics, about GMOs, you know, but the Food Justice Camp group is getting reorganized and having a new time, and I think that that's really the important thing, is that the group of people there, we're putting together a questionnaire we've got to put out to several different membership organizations, so it should go out in the coming months to thousands of people across Santa Cruz asking about these specific issues and getting a barometer for the importance for these issues and very specific data that we can mobilize our forces to make happen here.
Are you getting help or resistance from the authorities? Or both?
I don't think so far right now, when we've been out feeding people, I have not been stopped. When we've been at events and we've had food, we have not been stopped in the process. And that's probably the one thing right now that we've done consistently that would be questionable from the powers that be. I mean, standing out with signs, this and that, of course they can stop that. But
have they facilitated, let's say, permits and
no, we
large
have not.
Land grants? And
well, no, and I don't think there's been a lot of hum conversation with a lot of different people who've talked about a lot of different possibilities, but I don't think there's anything that I don't know yet of. I don't know if the Food Justice Coalition, other members know of, that's concrete. I know about some community garden projects, like private enterprise that are happening, private owners that are stepping up. As far as public land and reoccupying public land, that has you know, that is on
farming publicly.
Yeah, is on the table.
That was happening up in Albany, and I guess it got swept away.
It is on the table for a lot of people, and definitely it's a topic that we talk about in the Food Justice Coalition.
And that will be coming up. The next meeting will be
September 4th.
At
day after Labor Day, 5:30 Tuesday, 5:30 to 7 at India Joe's, 418 Front Street.
We've been talking with at least you're putting on a little weight, finally.
Oh, stop.
Skin and bones woman. We've been talking with
Roxanne.
Thanks, Roxanne. So we're talking with, you want to give your name?
Why?
For free radio.
Oh, okay. Hi, my name's Rick Kirby.
And Rick, you're here in court because you tried to give away puppies?
Well, I have a bunch of dogs, and I had a sign out at the flea market that just said puppy, and the SPCA didn't like that.
What happened?
An officer, Todd Stassi.
one of your favorite guys.
The dog Nazi, I call him. Todd Stassi, the dog Nazi, came and said, oh, how many dogs do you have? I said, 9. And he said, here's 9 tickets. And so each one is very expensive.
What are the tickets for?
They're for unregistered or unlicensed or something.
How old are these puppies?
They're old. Up to 15 years. I've had them for a long time. And I guess I might have been the same law back when I started, but I didn't know.
And so these are, when you say puppies, you really mean full doggies that were puppies.
Dogs, but they're little.
Little but adult doggies.
Yeah.
Do they resent being called puppies?
No, they like it.
Okay. So that, you know what, you're kind of pandering to the feelings of the dogs.
I always try to make them feel accepted and loved.
So you were in court today. What was the outcome? Just an arraignment, or did you have to actually, was there a judgment in the case?
Come back.
And you're facing 9. What's the average cost per ticket?
I don't know. A lot.
You can find it out in the law library if you're interested. In the basement. Think of the thrill.
I'm going to just go smoke a joint somewhere and forget about all this.
Indeed. We've been talking with...
I forget.
Thank you. So we have Eric Hammer here, who's running for supervisor, as we, some days later, counted by one of the activists here in the Finn's Cafe, where I'm talking to you. Your main platform is?
My main platform is having a local voice in our local district that can represent the people and fix the roads, the infrastructure, and the environment.
What specific policies are you recommending that differ from the current policy?
I think what I want to see differ is people's input in the solution.
And how would you differ from the current candidate or your opponent?
I'd be seen every day in my district, and I'm seen every day in my district now. And I'd listen to people, and I'd involve them in the process so we can have a solution that is driven with community input.
And what specific solutions are you proposing? Anything particular?
Let's talk just briefly just about building in the building department. You know, I want to streamline that. I want people to be able to go in and turn around toxic houses that are leaking into our environment and have that process be simplified so anybody can go in there and pull a building permit to fix something legally.
San Francisco has documented foreclosure fraud. Here in Santa Cruz, the assessor's office hasn't seemed too interested in doing that. You interested in that issue?
I am interested in that issue. As I'm walking districts, I am seeing more and more houses that are foreclosed or bank-owned, and people, you know, just deserted. It's criminal. I want to see the banks held responsible and the mortgage companies held responsible to help people reconsolidate their loans so they don't have to be evicted from their own homes.
Are you willing to take local action on this issue?
I am, and I already have.
What action have you taken?
I've been out in front of the courthouse with people. I have marched down.
Are you with the evil Occupy Santa Cruz people, perhaps?
Evil. There's no one evil out there who's speaking out for the community. Those people are not evil. Those people are us.
What do you think of the curfew that they set up around the courthouse from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. to stop Occupy from being there?
I don't think that curfews should be imposed Yes, I think people should have the right to be able to gather and speak, but I also think that people also need to abide by the rules that are in place. If they're jeopardizing...
And that, unfortunately, is where we ran out of tape for old Eric. I think so. Although, we might have actually picked it up on the other side. No, doesn't look like it. Eric Hammer is running against Bruce McPherson, and a lot of well-intentioned people are thinking, are doing the anything but Bush approach, where if we could just vote for the other candidate, you know, even if they haven't been too interested in local civil liberties issues and haven't done shit about them and won't commit themselves to doing anything around them. I'm not saying that's necessarily Eric Hammer. I just don't know what Eric Hammer's position is on this, and maybe I will as time goes by. That's about it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I want to thank those of you who sat through any or all of this 3.5-hour marathon. Troublesome Thomas Levitt apparently has abandoned Free Radio and hasn't been here for some time. But who knows? He may come back. His usual show is 7:30 to 9:30 every Sunday morning. He's got a show called The Wake Up Call. There you go. And who knows? He may be back with that. Coming up next on Free Radio is Making Contact. Later around 3, there'll be Law and Disorder. And between those two shows, we'll try and find something exciting to put on for you to hear. And, I'll be at the Huff meeting on Wednesday at 10 for those who wish to chatter about civil rights locally and the lack thereof, and maybe even do something. And again, there's a vigil coming up at 7 o'clock on Friday at City Hall, which we have Brent Adams to thank for. Thank you, Brent. And perhaps you'll be interested in coming to that to help restore a little dignity, sanity, and security for poor and homeless people in Santa Cruz by acknowledging that they too need to sleep at night, not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere, and need to have their property respected and their human dignity respected, something that has unfortunately not been the case for the last 25 years in this area, and particularly for the last 7 weeks of police harassment, threats, seizures, and citations, not to mention arrests. So that's about it. If you want to catch me off here, give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and we'll talk some more about whatever you're calling about.